Hello, this is William Fink, and this is the first Coustagenia open forum call at Coustagenia.net. It is Monday, May 31st, 9 p.m. Hello, Gerald. I don't have a whole lot of introductory material here.
Hello, Bill.
So I'm just turning on whoever wants to talk, and they could talk. And how you doing tonight? Hello, Martin.
I'm doing fine. I'm
doing great.
Wonderful.
I got this email today. I got an email today. It made me laugh because it reminds me of a lot of stories I heard when I was a kid. It was about a Jew that claimed to be an Auschwitz survivor. And he didn't drink for 3 years, and that's how he survived Auschwitz, because there was typhus in the water, or typhoid in the water. Typhus, I think it would be called, right? Well, he didn't have to drink because he put a pebble in his mouth, and that activated his saliva glands so that he never had to drink for 3 years, and thus he avoided getting typhus, typhoid fever, or whatever it's called. Is that and that's reminiscent of a lot of stories that I heard. But when but most of those whack job stories have been lost. Excuse me, Gerald.
Well, how did it keep their body from dehydrating without any liquid intake?
Well, right, because you're going to sweat and perspire, and your body needs water. There's no way you could live any length of time with no water from outside. But this is how nuts some of those Holocaust stories were. And this one just... It happened to survive, or it was revived. I don't know which is true. And supposedly, this figure was instrumental in getting the Holocaust Museum in Washington, which is incredible.
Getting into the Holocaust Museum?
Well, in getting it approved, and getting it through. He was one of those that lobbied for having the Holocaust Museum built in Washington.
Huh. I wonder if he still had the pebbles in his mouth when he was...
His name is William Loewenberg. William Loewenberg. Holocaust survivor.
What kept him from swallowing them?
It's a story. It's a made-up story. And he's actually peddling this as truth. That's
I'm shocked. A Jew making up a story?
Yeah, right. Imagine that.
Yeah, how about the whole, about the lampshades made out of Jew skin and the soap, you know, which were genetically proven to not be animal skins, and just that. The lies that they just tell are just...
Well, right, and most of those crazy stories went down the memory hole. And if the average person could hear all the stories that the Jews first came out with about this so-called Holocaust that individual Jews came up with, there is absolutely no way that they would that people would believe this Holocaust tale.
Well, you know, I was watching a YouTube that had a segment with Troy Donahue, and he was interviewing an individual, and it was amazing. Of course, they had all these old Jewish women sitting out there in the front row, and they were all primed to just ridicule and disrupt him. But the stories that they were telling, you know, it was almost laughable. And yet, they passed that off as just true. And people bought it. You know, I guess most everybody in the audience is handpicked to be on those programs to start with. But it's just ridiculous.
Yes, it is ridiculous. It's incredible the stories that they've come up with. it's incredible to yam, and most people have never heard them. But this guy actually has this tale about being about being in Auschwitz and chewing or sucking on a pebble for who knows how long in order to survive so that he didn't have to drink water. That's absolutely incredible. And people buy it. People are so caught up in the emotion and the, I don't know, the mystique of the Jew that they can believe these stories. I don't know. And I just thought I'd bring that up. Maybe somebody had something better to contribute to it or also heard about this guy or knew something about him. Yeah, I'm going to put in a link to a forum topic. And the forum topic has links to other websites that have this guy's story. And I'll put it down in the window down below. There. I don't know. I don't know. It's not that important, but I just thought I'd bring it up. Another thing I got today was from Fausto. I haven't seen Fausto in a while. You know, Fausto from TalkShoe.
Yeah.
Do you remember Fausto from Talk? I mean, he's a pretty long time listener to the programs, to Modern Eli's programs. Well, this one's good. BBC News. This is on the BBC website. news.bbc.uk. Whatever. I'm going to put this one in a forum, too. This is pretty good. I don't usually talk about this garbage, but this one's funny. Missing penis sparks mob lynching. Nigeria. Police in the southwestern Nigerian state of Osun say they have embarked on a constant patrol after mobs lynched at least 12 people since last weekend. This is the BBC now. All the killings occurred after victims were accused of making people's genital organs disappear. The Osun State Commissioner, Ganiu Dowadu, I wonder what color he is, who dismissed claims of organ disappearance, told the BBC that the mob killing started 2 weeks ago and has swept through the six main towns in the state, including the university town of Ife, and the state capital of Osogbo. The most gruesome case occurred on Friday when hundreds of members of the evangelical sect Brotherhood of the Cross went to the town of Olesa for their annual convention. While the sect members were on a house-to-house preaching mission, someone raised an alarm that his penis had disappeared. An angry mob descended on the visiting evangelists and burnt 8 of them to death. 2 buses and a car were also burnt. That's from the BBC. That's the Negro. That's what we're importing into our country in large numbers. That's what we have dwelling amongst us. That's incredible. And it's, I mean...
You know, I don't know. I sent that email out. I don't know if that was mine or you got it from some... But the question, you know, that came up into my mind when I read that first was, how does an individual suddenly discover that it's gone? I mean, wouldn't there be pain or some indication that there was something wrong with your body?
I think there's something wrong with all of them, but it's not necessarily, well, it's from the neck up. I mean, that's sickening. Now, Michael's been here all week, and he's sitting on
top of
the week.
I think it's just an excuse.
What else is happening today besides the stupid junk I got to bring up? Errol, we were talking about, before the program started, we were talking about Nesta Webster. Barwell was one of her sources. I'm probably destroying it.
Burrell. He was a Jesuit priest at one time, but of course, you know, so many people belong to a lot of these organizations or religions, and they become disenchanted, and they suddenly realize that there's something rotten in Denmark, and they start exposing whatever they're involved. He started exposing the Jesuits for what they were doing, and of course, you know, the Illuminati, the Jesuits were very influential in that, in the beginning of that, as they have been down through the decades and maybe centuries as far as secret societies are concerned. And so he started exposing them, and he put out that four-body set. I think he started in 1796 and finished them up in about 1798 or so. And that was first major work exposing the Illuminati. And of course, as we were discussing a little earlier, to see John Robinson picked that up, and he put out the first American edition in his Proofs of a Conspiracy, 1797, I think, or 98.
What was his name again?
And, you know, Robinson.
Okay, that was the Scottish professor.
Yeah.
That was the Scottish professor
he
that
did
A.
the
Ralph
first.
Quoted.
Yeah. All right. Well, he's he was kind of the authority in the English of the in this country for exposing the Illuminati, and of course he took, as I said earlier, he took his information from the Abbey Burrell, and I think it's the Abbey Burrell, if you want to be correct about it. But anyway, he suffered a lot of consequences for putting that information out. And of course, just shortly after that, you know, you had the Morganer, where Captain Morgan was taken out and murdered in a by trial, and they executed him basically because he was going to print what well, he did. He printed his information on the secrets that the Masons had back then, and of course he was. It wasn't so much an expose against Masonry as it was just telling about their rites and rituals and all that sort of thing, and all of the secrets that they had. And of course, you know, they take these oaths, it's supposedly it's death if you betray any of the oaths that you take. And they took him out, and they tried him, and they killed him. And I incidentally, talking about the library, I have a newspaper back, I think it's 1828, in which they were advertising for anyone that knew the whereabouts of Captain Morgan to please contact the newspaper that he was seeing. And of course, he was later discovered that he had murdered. But I bought that newspaper just for that article because I found that rather amusing. It just backs up a lot of the information that we are that we're given. You know, people say, "Well, how do you know this particular conspiracy or part of the conspiracy really existed?" Well, if you can go back archives and you can find original documentation, especially newspaper articles, then, you know, that's pretty good reference that the information might be correct. I think on a previous program I was mentioning a newspaper that I have in 1917. It's, I think it's the Los Angeles Times or San Diego Times. It's one of those in which they're talking about, it's a news article, that vast sum of money has passed hands into a German bank on its way to support Lenin and Trotsky in the Bolshevik Revolution. Well, actually, I think, yeah, it was Trotsky. It wasn't Kerensky. But it's an article about this money being sent by way of the German banks to help finance the Russian Revolution. Of course, we know that was from Kuhn Loeb and Company and Jacob Schiff. You know, he sent $20 million over there. And it's a news article that's telling that. And I find that is tremendous documentation that the event actually happened. And that's what a lot of my library is made up of, that type of information. But anyway, I'm sorry, I'm rattling.
Oh, you could rattle. That's the best type of information is is information from people contemporary to the events. And it's
nice to get it from
more than one source. But that's why I read all the Greek classics. I won't read a book that's written about ancient events that's written today. I'd rather read the books that were written when those events transpired. You want to read about the Persian War?
Well,
Herodotus.
You see, that's... Right. Well, see, that's really how my library started. My ear itches if you hear a noise. When I began to discover about the conspiracy and everything... I had lots of magazines and newspaper type hate organizations put out these newspapers and everything, and so I began to mark for every fact that I ran across that was interesting, and I would go to their source. So many of them quoted a particular book or source. And I would hunt out the original copy of that book or source. And that's really how my library began. And consequently, I have an extremely large section on the conspiracy. And a lot of the original books I have in the teens and 20s and 30s and even into the 40s. And I have all original editions. And a lot of them are the early classic, well, we just say Henry Ford's four-volume set on the International Jew. Well, I have an original a copy of that. And I have the first American printing in English of the Protocols of Learned Elders of Zion. It's it's quite an expensive book if you can find an original copy of it. But mine is in pristine condition. And not only does it have protocols, but it has a lot of interesting backup material, and it was printed in 1920. And I also have it in French, Spanish, and another. I think I have it in Russian, not the original, obviously, but a Russian copy. But I have so many of those original documents, and it's fun to sometimes I'll go into the library and I'll start coming through a lot of these and reminiscing over them and whatnot.
You're cutting out
I said earlier, I have all of well, I wonder why. Webster's books. And I asked you a question. I don't know if I got an answer. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, you were cutting out a little bit.
Oh. Well, I've been over. I don't know what that meant. But anyway, my question to you, Bill, was, how much of Nesta Webster's World Revolution are you planning on reading on your Sungrams?
Well, only the first two chapters. We're done with chapter one, and we're going to read chapter two. And I'd like to present that because it presents the Jewish connection to the French Revolution. That's the beginning of overt Jewish war against Christianity. I mean, it's always been in the background. But that's the beginning in this modern age of the overt Jewish war against Christianity. That's the way I see that. And it has not ended since.
Okay.
But let me just make an announcement.
The French
Revolution. It's storming real bad here. And there's thunder and lightning, and it's terrible. And if I disappear, it's because my cable got knocked out, and Boxar is pretty much going to pick up the slack. I hope he's willing to do that. And another thing is, if anybody wants to speak, please click on self and then click on Request Talk Power, and you'll be granted the ability to talk. And that's so that we could have a formal program and a recording and a little bit of order, or I just do this in the open house. The open house channel would be good enough. That's all I want to say. And I hope somebody does want to talk, because that this is an open forum program, and that's what it's for.
Yeah, because I'm going to hush in a minute. I was asking you a question. Do you have Nesta Webster's French Revolution? She put out a very thick volume.
No, I don't. I have World Revolution, and I have one. Elizabeth Dilling's Jewish Religion, Its Influence Today. I have The Eve of the French Revolution, which is a book by an 1800s book, I think, by, let me get this guy's name because I don't remember it, Edward J. Lowell. I have to evaluate that yet. Somebody sent that to me and said that it was a good book. And I have another paper I want to evaluate yet called Witness to History by Michael Walsh that I thought about reading through. You may know how that is or not already. It was recommended to me. But I don't plan on, Brian and I don't plan on spending a whole lot of time on the French Revolution. It's 3 or 4 weeks is, I think, sufficient to make our point, and then we'd like to bring it back to maybe spend a little time with the 1848 revolutions. And maybe Ralph Epperson's chapter on communism, and bring it back to Hitler, because that's our point, is to show this ongoing systemized war against Christianity in Europe especially, but also here, but it culminated in World War II. That was, the apex was the Bolshevik Revolution and then World War II. And basically the Jews have defeated us. I mean, look at us now. We have, as a nation, America has rolled over and given itself up to the Jews in the cultural battles. Look at where we are now. They have our kids. They have our hearts and minds. It's absolutely clear. And the only thing that's going to get us out of this is Yahweh himself.
The tragedy, which I think a lot of people are not seeing, is the fact that we have allowed the forces that be to set up a fifth column in this country, and it's one of the largest columns to exist in any country they've attacked. And these people are bloodthirsty, and they're after us. And all they need to be done is turn loose on us, and we're going to see the biggest bloodbath that we could imagine. And I don't think people are understanding that this could be a lot nearer than what they, it's very scary, because I live in Louisiana, and we're next door to Texas, which is next door to the other states down there, where the Mexicans are almost 50%, and of course in Florida they already are, but these people are out for our scalps, literally, and it's very scary. I think our biggest threat is going to come from them and not necessarily the blacks. The blacks will kind of implode on themselves. They'll wind up killing and eating each other. And all we need to do is the cities. But these Mexicans, they're going to, I think they're going to be very vicious in what they're planning to do.
No doubt. And it's our own stupidity. As a race, it's our own stupidity. It's our own love for liberty that's gotten us into this mess. Because we're stupid enough to think that all these heathen races have the same love for liberty and respect for the rights of others. They have no respect at all for anything except force. They respect force. That's all they respect. And we're not in a position to be forceful. I mean, 90% of our people are whores. and the other 10% are vastly outnumbered. That's why we're the great whore. There's no doubt in my mind. Great whore that's in bed with the
police. I'm going to encourage some other people to call in because I'm running out of things to talk about. And I'd like to hear some other people to call.
All right, if people don't want to talk, I'm going to start singing or something. Reading my
You threaten that every week.
Yeah, I know.
You threaten that every week, Bill, and it always works. It always works. You see.
Whatever you do, not that, please.
If anybody wants to talk, click on self. Click on request talk power. I'm not going to unmute anybody who doesn't want to talk, but this is an open forum program, and it's here for discussion purposes. It's not here for much else.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, General.
Bruce, is your microphone open?
Yeah, I just keep it muted because I didn't know if there's any background sound. Does it sound okay now if I keep it unmuted?
There's a little background noise, but it's
terrible. I can hear your motor running.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll just click it when I'm not talking. But there, the motor stopped. Yeah, I was driving through Ohio, and I was just noticing all the non-whites, and wow, it's like, I'd say about... honestly, about two-thirds to three-quarter of the two-legged creatures I saw walking around were non-whites, you know. And, you know, I watched that Alien in the Temple video again today. And it's just amazing how these niggers are spouting out the same crap that the Jews are.
Which crap is that?
Oh, that they are Jacob Israel.
Oh, you watched the Alien, and that's the that's the what I called that video on my website. I got you now, Bruce. I'm sorry. I don't. It's hard for me to remember everything I got on my website. So I'm sorry. Yeah, it's about these black Edomites these black Israelites that they think that they're the lost 12 tribes of Israel and. And they think that all white people are the Edomites.
Yeah, and actually, the Puerto Ricans? The Puerto Ricans are the tribe of Zebulun, and the Hawaiians are from somewhere else, and the Dominicans are another tribe, and yeah, it's some cockamamie.
Well, we deserve it. As a people, we deserve it. I mean, we personally don't, but. But most of the white race deserves it because they've let the Jews lie to them about history. And it's all right in old books, and they won't read it. It's not like it's a hidden secret. Ancient history and the things we teach in identity is not a hidden secret. Open up Josephus, open up Strabo, open up Theodorus. It's all there. But white people won't read it. And they accept the Jew lies instead. So they deserve to... they basically deserve to be butt wipes for niggers. That's the way it is. That's what happens to you when you want to jump in bed with the devil and embrace Satan. That's I know it's a horrible thing to think about, but that's 90% of our race is doing just that. And they've been doing it for 100 years. So they deserve to have be chastised by Negroes, monkeys that think they're God's people. That's absolutely disgusting. That's incredible.
Yeah, it reminded me exactly when I was a little kid, my folks took us kids to the zoo, and there would be these chimpanzees that would bend over and poop in their hands and swing around and hurl their feces at people watching them. And, you know, it's the same kind of thing. Just watching that is just like reminded me of that monkey. Throwing his poop.
Well, that's a good analogy because that's what's going on. That's exactly what's going on. Who taught them how to use YouTube anyway? It's probably some Jew uploading those YouTubes. They're not doing it. I won't believe it. That's a pretty disgusting that's a pretty disgusting idea that the Negroes could be the children of Israel, and it flies in the face of all history. But because our people are so ignorant, that they would fall for that story.
Well, it goes along the exact same lines as saying that all the races come from Shem, Japheth, and Ham.
Oh, right. We deserve the chastisement for buying the lies. That's what happens when you want to believe lies. There's no doubt. Well, Michael, I see you made it over here from Talk Show.
Yeah, you talking to me, Bill?
Yes. I said, I see you made it over here from Talk Show. I was wondering when you were going to get my message.
Yeah, I know. I couldn't find my belt with both hands. I hear what you guys are talking about. I got a book called Iron Curtain Over America by Brother Beatty, and I was just wondering if anybody's got an opinion on that book. And then I got one other question I was trying to type in regarding the Omni Christian Book Club. They're like a patriot club. I think they're out of L.A. And I just come in contact with that. I wanted maybe your advice, your opinion on that.
What's the name of that? Something.
May
Christian
I say
football?
Something?
Yeah, Gerald, I thought you had something to say about Iron Curtain Over America. I was actually hoping you would.
Well, Iron Curtain Over America was written by Colonel John Beatty. And that was actually probably one of the first general books on the Khazars and Jewish control in America, and it was probably one of the best. That was the primer that we used to slip to the John Birchers. They had their 9 books that they wanted everybody to read, which they were conservative books, but they didn't dare mention the 3-letter word much. But we would get these John Archers, and when we felt like they was just about ready, we would slip them a copy of Iron Curtain Over America and tell them to read it. But that is a good book. I'm not saying everything in there is 100%, but for the most part, he's got his facts right. He didn't understand Christian identity, of course, as most of the people back in the age didn't. But it's a classic. And I'm very fortunate. I have a signed autographed copy by him, and it's not just a regular cloth edition. It's a classic 100 printing edition of him, but it's out in paperback. Now I'm not sure. I'm afraid to buy a paperback edition of an early book. Because our friends always manage to get in there and manipulate some of the information, and I don't know if the paperback editions have been edited or whether they're pure books. But that is a good book to read, and it's an excellent book for someone who doesn't understand the conspiracy or who the Jews are. And I recommend it, to anyone that wants to learn. It's most everybody that comes into these forums and these shows are pretty educated along those lines. But it's still a real good book, and it's a good book to refresh if you've forgotten a lot of the facts of history and whatnot. It's a good book for that. So read it, Mike, and we'll have a pop quiz in 2 weeks.
Okay, I don't know if I'm going to get time to it that quick because I got to go back in for minor surgery. But the other question I was going to ask you, Gerald, and all you brothers and sisters out there, are you familiar with the Omni Christian Book Club?
I got a, just got a catalog by then that just dropped in my mailbox.
What was the name of that Christian bookstore in California? I'm sorry,
Gerald,
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I'm not sure if that's the original Omni a book company that they did an awful lot of reprints of some real good books. And but I didn't know if they were still in operation or not. They've been around for a while, and they put out an awful lot of good books. It may be the same group of people.
Yes, this their 48th year, and they've got books in here called the like the secrets, the hidden you know, the hidden hand, the Federal Reserve, goes on and on. The Red Fog Over America, and things like that. And also they've got stuff, Catholicism. They must have, I don't know, 200 items. And I was just wondering if you were familiar with it.
Yeah.
It's called the Omni Christian
Book Club. That's the same one. And, they put out a wealth of information, and nearly all the books that they put out are pretty good books. So, if they print it, it's generally a pretty good book.
Okay.
What was the name
real
of the
quick?
Go ahead, Mike.
Bill, it is called the Omni
No. I don't mean that one. There was a Christian book club that had reprinted the L.A. Waddell books I read. I don't have them down here, or I'd look them up. I thought Gerald might remember. It was a Christian book club in California. I'll check.
Well, there was a Christian. Yeah, there was a Christian book company in California. Of course, Gerald L. K. Smith's group was out there, and I don't know how far back you're talking about, but there was the Christian Nationalist Crusade that was responsible for printing an awful lot of back then. And of course, I think they're defunct now. I don't think they're in operation. But I don't know if that's the same one you're talking about or not.
Yes, I know what Bill's talking about. It's called Emissary Publications. They are Emissary Publications. They used to have by Des Griffin or Griffith out of Clackamas,
okay.
Oregon.
Oh, that's not them. This is definitely from California.
Well, he originally started out in California. That was during the time Clifton got his material. And the only other place where you can get spiral-bound books like Rawlinson and Waddell and those guys that I know of
the books I have two L.A. Waddell books. I got them very early in my prison bid. I can't remember where I got them from, to be absolutely honest with you, but it was from a Christian book club in California, and I have British Eddas and Phoenician Origins of the Breton, Scots, and Anglo-Saxons. And there's a few others that I wanted that I never had the chance to get because I couldn't find them anymore.
Okay, the only thing I can think of is that would have been Reraymond Capps' original publishing company in Oakland, California. See, that or when he went to Thousand Oaks down just north of L.A.
Yeah. I'll make sure I know. I'll go up. Yeah, you know, most of my books are upstairs.
Yeah. Another thing, Bill. Real quick, all of that material, I can almost guarantee you can get it through our brother, Balakias.
Oh, yeah, Robert.
Yes.
Yeah, you know,
You
know, I host a website for him, and I would encourage people to stop by and actually get, you know, help support his work, because he's written a lot of pretty good books. And it's stm.christogeni. .org. He doesn't.
Yeah.
You know, he. I'm going to be honest. I think,
well, of course,
this is my perception. We do. Well, we do correspond from time to time, but I think that he doesn't really warm up to me but like Eli or Clifton do, because I think that my style is just a little too brash and rough around the edges for him. He's a really, really great guy. He's very civil. He's a very kind man, and he's very studious. And even though we don't see eye to eye on all our doctrine, he does a very good job at many things.
You know, what he does do, he has a lot of original editions of books that he has reproduced. And, of course, some people might think they're rather expensive because he charges, so much a page. But it's very expensive putting all that stuff together. Exactly.
He makes,
That's the point I was going to make.
He copies them all. He cuts them in half. He combines them. I have, that is how I read, when I was in prison, that's how I read Sharon Turner's History of the Anglo-Saxons. And that's how I read George Moore's The Lost Tribes and the Saxons of the East and the Saxons of the West, were because I got my brother, I twisted his arm to spring for some of his Federal Reserve notes and send them to Balak Hyatt so I could get those books. But yeah, I the books, the editions that I read were from Robert Balak Hyatt.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, Gerald and Bill, a couple things I heard about Alan. I hear he's quite very, very strong on nutrition and that he really keeps himself in good shape. And, I mean, he is just as far as has the knowledge as far as taking care of his good health. I guess he just has phenomenal knowledge on that. And then the other thing I wanted to ask everybody's opinion on, a friend of mine gave me a CD by a guy by the name of Peter S. Ruckman. And I was just wondering if anybody can give me some advice on that guy. I haven't listened to it yet.
Never heard of him.
Haven't heard of him.
Okay.
Is it Rupkin's Silpskin or? Oh. I never heard of him.
Well, Michael, sometimes you search the extremities in a movement and you'll fall off the edge, right? I mean, that's the way it is.
Well, I know one thing. I was a pilot for 7 years, and I haven't had to crash and land yet. I've been able to, land every time on my feet.
When you fly the big
Martin
planes?
Got muted.
I the small twins.
Martin muted himself. That's not when the microphone is muted where the blue ball should be, that person muted themselves. Do you understand? He muted himself.
Yes.
If anybody wants to speak, please click self on the menu and click request talk power, and you'll be and I'll turn you on so that you can speak.
Yeah, that self is right up at the very top of the page. It's in that toolbar.
One of the misters complaining about the poor selection of smileys here. You just can't have everything for everybody. I'm sorry, it just doesn't work. Yes, it's the smiley stone age. This is not TalkShoe. I miss the little red devils. That's what I miss, is the little red devils. Well, from Pennsylvania saying you could also right-click your name and request talk power, and that's true. And a little icon comes up that lets me know to grant that person to speak or not. And if I'm not paying attention, BoxArt can also do it. And he's really welcome to do that if he's being more alert than I am, which is not hard to do.
Hey, Bill, I got a quick question on a passage in Acts.
Yes?
Yes, Acts chapter 18, verse 8. And we know after Acts 11:15, we don't see any more mention of water. But Acts 18, verse 8, talks about Crispus, the chief ruler of the synagogue, believed on the Lord and all of his house, and many of the Corinthians, hearing, believed and were baptized. How should I understand baptized there?
But well, there's no more mention of water. And Paul taught a baptism in the death of Christ. And I've demonstrated that several times. It's right in Romans. And that's, you know, Christ's baptism from his own testimony. I have a baptism to be baptized in. And that was only a couple of weeks before the crucifixion that he said that. It's the word of God that cleanses. We should immerse ourselves in his death and accept his sacrifice on our behalf and believe his word. And that cleanses, because that is what gets us to separate ourselves from the society. When you embrace the word of the words of Yahshua Christ, and when you embrace the laws of God as Christians should, the true moral laws, not the rituals, then you're cleansed of all the filth of society.
Okay, so when I read after Acts 11:15, and now all the way through the rest of scriptures, and it talks about being baptized, washing of the water of the word, like Ephesians says.
Yeah, I'll be into that this week with Eli. Ephesians 5:26. I can't wait to get there.
Okay, well that clarifies it, because everybody, I got into an argument just the other day with the guy over that, and he kept wanting me to interpret it water. And I told him, I don't see we already have the liberty to do that, according to Hebrews and according to Ephesians.
Well, I lay out the argument pretty good in a paper called Baptism in What? On my website.
I thought I had a copy of that with me, but I didn't when I went to Kinko's. So I'm going to have to have my friend set up the file for me.
Well, you
so
know, you should probably save a couple of dollars and send them to Clifton. And I mean, he usually charges like $8, I think, for 100 pamphlets. And you can tell him, you know, try to get me 25 of those and 25 of those. And I'm sure he'd be more than willing to do that. And every essay in the historical essays on my site, and every essay in the biblical essays section on my site, and except the Race of Genesis 10, because that's too long for a single pamphlet, and the Christogenia overview. But all those other essays I wrote and all of the pamphlets that Clifton has written, he's written four times more essays than I have, more pamphlets, they're all available from Clifton for a few pennies each, basically, is what he'll print them for you and mail them to you. And it's a great handout. And I do it myself. And Clifton, if you wanted 20 copies of this one and 20 copies of Clifton would be more than willing to do that for you and just cover his costs. That's all he asks. And I don't even think what he asks covers his costs, you know, but that's all he asks.
Yeah, Bill, I talk to Clifton on the phone off and on probably four or five times. I get my money goes in tonight because I only get two checks a month. I'm going to be sending. I already got an envelope made out for Clifton just to send some money, you know, share with them, and then I'm going to share something with you.
I'd really like you to see, you know, get those pamphlets and use them for handouts. But there's a few pamphlets I've written and that Clifton have written that I consider, maybe it's my own pride, but that I consider just good foundational pamphlets. One of them is Clifton's pamphlet, They're Your Children, Do You Care? It's a good foundational pamphlet. You know, and that's, I always give them out to people. I leave them laying around the Walmart up here and in the racks at the supermarket. I go to town, I take three or four pamphlets, throw them in my back pocket and stick them in the rack at the supermarket. And maybe someday somebody will pick one of them up and it'll make a difference for them. But for a 10-cent investment, it's probably well worth it, right?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think it should be more for the labor that you guys have put in, my personal opinion, because we're all in this together, you know, and there's enough money floating around out there. We could, you know, we all should, I don't know. I just think you, the labor that you and Clifton done, because I've read everything on your site, Bill, and I've read everything Clifton's put together, and it's beyond phenomenal. It's put all the pieces of the puzzle together with my Bible, and I don't have the words to express my humility for your help.
Well, that's all we're supposed to do.
I just like the fact that this group of people that I was led to meet, the people that I met that have helped me out so much, and the realm of simplicity that I live in, we've been able to, you know, we're kicking some serious ass, believe it or not. I know we're doing warfare in the heavenlies. I really believe that.
Well, we can only do what we can, and that's it. I mean, we have to try to do that. If every good Christian woke up every day and didn't say, "What can I get today for me?" but instead said, "What can I do today for my brethren?" Well, we'd have a much better world. As soon as they find out what, you know, who their brethren are.
Amen.
But we would have a much better world. Craig Howard, praise Yahweh. Hello. Craig?
Oh, Greg.
Well, he requested talk power, but he don't really want to talk.
I haven't listened to his talks with Eli on Enoch yet. I'll have to...
I'm a bum because neither have I, and I feel really... I'm just... I have no excuse for that. I'm just a bum.
Just so you're not a bomb. B-O-E-H-M.
Yeah, no, I'm not one of those kinds of bums. Yes, I guess Greg is probably having microphone issues again. Thanks, RP. Eli's trying to speed through Isaiah, though. I'm sorry, I think he's in a race with somebody else or something, because he's really rushing through Isaiah. I expect he's run me out of notes every week for the last 4 weeks, I swear. I prepare 3 chapters worth of notes in advance, or 5. He still manages to run me out of notes to get to the point where I'm beyond the notes that I prepared for the program. Not that I can't hoof it, but I like to be ready.
Hey, Gerald.
We have to get RP a microphone. His wife got the microphone.
Yes.
We have to get RP a microphone.
Yeah. Gerald, I have a book I got about when I was involved with a Christian patriot move in San Jose called The New World Order by Bill Still. And I want your opinion on that.
Well, it's been a long time since I've read it. It's not coming back right now as to how good it was. I've got in the library, what I've got's a paperback. I don't know if he put a hardback out or not, but, I don't know how thorough he is. I don't remember, to be honest with you. I'm thinking it's not as good as, some of the other book, but I may be wrong, so don't take me literally on that.
Okay. I was going to ask Bill one other scriptural question, and I think it's in Ezekiel chapter 16, where it says to Judah, he says, your mother wasn't Amorite, and your father was a Hittite, or I may have it backwards. Bill, if you could just help me out on that one verse at the beginning.
I always use that verse to elucidate the fact that that is what Jeremiah is talking about in chapter 2, where Yahweh says through the prophet that he had planted a noble seed, and how did it grow into a strange vine? And that's what he's saying in that same chapter, Jeremiah chapter 2, where he says that, that you know, you sin and you can't, no matter how much soap you use, you can't wash the sin off your face. And that's because the people of Jerusalem were race mixing, and they were Jeremiah's bad figs. And Ezekiel was writing at the same time Jeremiah was. But Ezekiel was in the dispersion, and Jeremiah was not. Jeremiah was still in Jerusalem. And Ezekiel said, your mother was a Hittite, your birth and nativity was of the Amorites, and your mother was a Hittite, but because they were race mixing. They were mixing with the Hittites and the Canaanites in Jerusalem. I mean, it's the same thing. You know, let's take New York as an example, right? Down in the city, you have a lot of white people that are intermarrying with Jews and other seemingly whites that aren't quite really white. And then you have a lot of white people that are straight up marrying Negroes and Puerto Ricans, too. But upstate, most of the white people are related with white people, except for your other little cities like Albany and Buffalo and Rochester, where you have... in other words, most of the race mixing happens in the city. Is what I'm trying to say. But, well, in Judah, the entire countryside and all the smaller towns were carted away by the Assyrians, except Jerusalem. And in Jerusalem, well, that's where most of the race mixing was occurring. That's why you had a basket of bad figs and a basket of good figs in Jerusalem. That's why Ezekiel said your birth and your nativity was of the Amorites and your mother was a Hittite. However, I'm just paraphrasing it. That's what is going on. That's the strange plant of Jeremiah chapter 2. That's the people that can't wash the sin off their face, because an Ethiopian can't change his skin and a leopard can't change his spots. Well, that's why that's there. Take that and match that up to Jeremiah chapter 2, because they're talking about the same thing in two different ways.
Okay. And by that time, most of the 12 tribes had already been dispersed when Ezekiel wrote that. Is that correct?
All dispersed. Yeah, the 12 tribes were taken away. I mean, just about all of Israel was taken away. You know, there was always a remnant left behind. It never got taken away.
Yes.
All of Israel that would be taken was taken. And all of Judah, except the inhabitants of Jerusalem, were taken.
Yeah,
it was taken 100 years before Jeremiah and Ezekiel wrote.
I was saying, Clifton points out that almost half of Judah were taken into captivity into Assyria with the 10 tribes.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. The whole countryside was taken. It was the people in the city that were left behind. And Jeremiah and Ezekiel wrote over 100 years before the Assyrian captivity began.
It's kind of like a...
And Ezekiel...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Bruce.
No, that's okay. Well, I was going to say, you remember how Joseph was sold into Egypt by his 10 brothers? Well, it's kind of like Yahweh taking our forefathers away. We might have, at the time, it was, you know, devastating, but it was for our good in the end. When we
well, right, and Yahweh said that all through Isaiah. Eli and I have already, you know, it's been part of our discussions. That Yahweh was telling through the prophet, he was telling all these people they were going to be taken away by the Assyrians, but that ultimately it would be for their good. And that it was, because we grew into the entire Germanic race.
Yeah, it was actually,
I believe the good figs of Jeremiah were the, Jeremiah was only talking about Jerusalem. And the good figs were the people that returned and built the intertestamental kingdom and waited on the Christ and expected his advent. And the bad figs brought us the Talmud a couple hundred years later.
Okay, Bill, one other thing, and then I'll shut up. And that is on the Ezekiel 34, verse 13. And it says, I will bring them out from the people and gather them from the countries and will bring them their own land and feed them upon the mountains of Israel by the rivers and all the inhabited places of the country.
Yeah, that's now, all that in the land past. Right that's there, long in the past. That happened when the children of Israel, as Scythians and Cimmerians, left Media and Persia and Assyria and the places they were taken captive to. They left those places and migrated up around the Black Sea and around the Caspian Sea and across the Caucasus and eventually migrated into Europe. That's what that's talking about. And I clearly demonstrated that in the this last program that I did with Eli. That was, if I didn't make it clear, I just ain't the guy to do it. And from Ezekiel, from Isaiah chapters 43 through 46, we covered them the other night, and that was clearly demonstrated.
Okay, I must have missed that one because I must have missed that, Bill, because I thought that the Isaiah 43 through 46 is the one I listened to, not on Ezekiel. And
yeah,
I must have missed
that. Yeah, that is Isaiah. Ezekiel's talking about the same thing. Ezekiel's talking about the same thing.
You know, two prophetic witnesses at the same time frame there, huh?
Well, Isaiah's writing
that helps.
He's writing just before 700 BC, and Ezekiel's writing around up until just before the fall of Jerusalem, up until around 600 BC, maybe a little later. In fact, I think the later chapters of Ezekiel do discuss the actual fall of Jerusalem. I know Jeremiah does, but Jeremiah and Ezekiel are contemporaries. Isaiah is 100 years sooner.
Would you know exactly what year...
I'd like to clarify that, Bill.
Would you know exactly what year Elijah was around, Bill? Off the top of your head?
That would have to be about 850 B.C., I would think. I don't have it off the top of my head, but that was in the days of Ahab, the king.
Mm-hmm. About 850. Mm-hmm. Oh.
Well, that's a guess off the top of my head. I mean, it's probably wrong.
No, it's okay. I don't know. I was just curious.
Well, I'm going to try to look it up here in a second. I got notes in one of these books somewhere. I'm flipping through my old study Bible. Actually, I bought this Bible that I it's the King James I wrote all my notes in prison. I bought this from Robert Thalacius back around 19. Let me see what it says in the cover. Maybe I didn't write it in. Oh, strangely, I didn't write it in. In almost every one of my books, I write the date that I got it, and I never did that to this Bible. That's crazy. But it had to be in 99 or 90. Oh, no, 18th of November, 1998, I wrote it in the back cover. I got this Bible from Robert Balakias. who I remember offered me a discount on it because it was slightly used. Wow, that was a long time ago. I hope I don't have to live that again. Well, this Bible, they date Ahab to 874 to 853 BC. So I would be exactly right almost saying 850 BC for Elijah. Elijah was a prophet during the reign of Ahab, right?
Yes.
Early in his reign, I think, and not to the end of it. So that's the time frame. But sometime, I would say, you can't really date it. It's so hard to date these kings because there are so many problems with chronology, and I think it's a lot of it's just problems with our understanding of the chronology. But any time between 900 and 850 BC is good enough for the time of Elijah.
Ah, yes, sir. Yeah, and he's the one that was Jezebel was chasing, and Jezebel, and then she's mentioned in Revelations. As far as the spirit of Jezebel or whatever.
Well, if anybody wants to say anything, just right-click your own name and click Request Talk Power, or click Self on the menu and click Request Talk Power, and you'll be granted. I hope somebody wants to talk. I'm not... Michael and Bruce are good guys, but... It'd be nice if other people pitched in here too. This is an open forum.
Well, program. What about me?
Well, Gerald, told me you were out of things to say, but you can talk all you want.
I've got a question. Not that it's a subject, and because it's a good subject, but I noticed that whenever I want to go and type something in a chat room, I'm automatically muted, and I have to go back up there and click on my name in order to get unmuted. Is that natural?
I think it's a Jewish conspiracy against in your computer.
Oh, I so too.
There's a little pike in your computer. Because, Gerald, that's not natural.
Well, it's fun. As a matter of fact, anything I do... automatically mutes me, and I have to go back and unmute myself. I just figured y'all was going to tell me something.
Hey, Gerald.
Son of the Miss just made a crack about the South, and there's about 18 people here from the South. He's about to get lynched.
Hey, Gerald.
Yes.
Quick question for you. That book that you had year 500, about the secret societies, were there any other societies?
You mean the 1500s? You mean the 1500s?
1500s. Were there any other secret societies mentioned other than the Masons?
Secret societies... Yeah, secret societies are something that goes all the way back to recorded history. There were secret societies 4,000 years ago or whatever. And of course, you had the Venere, which was a Catholic secret society out of Italy. I pronounced that just right.
I believe it was a precursor.
There were literally hundreds of secret societies, and they go all the way back. I was showing, I forgot who it was, but I've got a book written in 1704, which was before the Freemasonry started. And this was a book that was that recorded the secret society, the very first secret society in England, which was made up of the dukes and earls and princes and the king and nearly all the nobility and the court of England. it was a society that was established kind of like a fun thing. I guess it was
like
equivalent to Mardi Gras. But they it was very elaborate secret society. And then it actually evolved into Freemasonry. Of course, any Mason will argue with you because they want to tell you that Masonry goes all the way back to King Solomon. Well, Freemasonry does not. So, but this is a very interesting book, and it was written in 1704. But to answer your question, there were many, many, many secret societies, and you can just you can go crazy. Secret societies in the Middle Ages were very prominent. As a matter of fact, I've got several books on the secret societies in the Middle Ages. And most of them you can't pronounce, you've never heard of before, but they all had distinctive roles in history. And secret societies are a lot like what I call modern day boiler rooms. You know, these telemarketers set up these crooked companies in order to sell things to businesses and individuals. And whenever they get caught, they just shut up their office and they go across the hall or down the street and they set up another. And instead of XYZ company, they're YZX company. And they operate mostly out of California and Florida. But anyway, secret societies did the same thing. Whenever they stopped their bounds or they got in trouble with the public, they would shut their doors and declare themselves disbanded, and they would go somewhere else, and they would start a new secret society. But yet the records, the membership, and a lot of the goals and purposes were identical to the one that closed down. And so secret societies have more or less have evolved over hundreds of years. I don't know if that answers your question or not, but it's been a while since I've studied secret societies. Maybe one day I'll get back in there and get on it again. But Nesta Webster, everything seems to go back to Nesta Webster. But she put out an excellent book, and it was called Secret Societies, Subversive Movements. And it was kind of a primer, kind of like Iron Curtain Over America. It was a primer on the secret societies. And she goes way back in history and kind of brings the history of secret societies forward. And it's a very interesting. It's also available in paperback. And there again, I haven't checked out to make sure that it hadn't been abridged. But if you want to get deep and you really want to get into studying secret societies, then that would be an excellent book to get. I say it is available. You can still get hardback original copies, but you're gonna pay a dollar or two for them. But they are available. As a matter of fact, you can get them on eBay.
Was there anything about any?
I hope I don't know if I answered your question.
Was there anything about any Jewish secret societies?
I'm sorry, buddy. Somebody sure. Made a noise. This is you. I was asking that question. Oh,
please.
Somebody barked. Bill barked. Is that Samsonville?
Huh. Was there any?
Yes, that's. I'm trying to mute my microphone while he's barking. It ain't working. Yes, that's Samson.
You may hear Jocko.
Open the door.
Well, you may hear Jocko meow.
General Michael was asking if they mentioned the Jews in those secret societies.
Well, of course, Esther Webster did, but mostly they mentioned their names, and of course you can, you know, you can put two together, or you can Google them, or you can find out what, in many instances, what nationalities were. But she did mention some Jews, you know, by name, but the Jews have played a prominent role in secret societies since the very beginning. Anytime you start studying a secret society, you're gonna find Jews. That's one of their main modes of operation is through secret societies. So you can't study any secret society without uncovering Jesuits. Jews are part of with the Jesuits. So, you know,
was there any something called the Brotherhood of the Serpent?
That's not ringing a bell. I would be surprised.
Let me say something.
I've never heard of that either.
In ancient Greece, the religious temples had secret rites and mysteries. They all did. Herodotus wrote about the Eleusinian mysteries that he could not repeat or describe. The temples had initiation rites, and once you were initiated, you took part in, and these mysteries were imparted to you. And they were all associated with these ancient pagan temples. And I think that that's where these later medieval secret societies got most of their garbage from. It's basically the Canaanite religion carried into the modern world. That's basically what it goes back to.
Mm.
The Greeks worshipped the Kabiri. The Kabiri, the word Kabiri, it is actually a Hebrew word that means great ones. And they were played a prominent role in the
Nephilim.
Greek and Trojan religious systems. And this is all pretty well known from ancient inscriptions. So again, we see our Hebrew lineage into the Mediterranean through that, and that's denied by mainstream theologians, but they're just being stupid. And all of those ancient mystery religions are what these medieval cults are based on. And that's it all comes right from the Canaanites. I mean, it's Mystery Babylon is what the hell it is. I mean, it's another manifestation of it. There's many manifestations of it.
Don't you think that you could actually trace it all the way back to Satan himself? I mean, because that's I think, one of his major ways that he is letting his people subvert the world is through these societies.
Well, the problem is that we put up with these societies time and again. We let them into our communities in the name of good. It's always in the name of good. Oh, these Masons, they're good. That they do things for widows and children and have barbecues and fundraisers, and they don't. People are always sucked into it one way or another.
Well, you know, I used to feel guilty because I'm a recipient of what the Shriners have done. Not been for the Shriners Hospital, you know, I would not have been able to walk most of my life and have the style of life that I had back then, because I was never supposed to walk when I was I contracted polio when I was 10 months old, and in 1941 I was able to enter the Shriners Hospital in Shreveport, which incidentally was the first Shriners Hospital ever built. It was built in 1922, and Mama knew someone who was a friend of a Shriner, and back then that was about the only way you could get into the Shriners Hospital. You had to be you had to know someone, and they had to sponsor you. But anyway, I was there for 14 years, up to age 14. I had 20 operations that they completely rebuilt my ankles and my knees and everything, and I was ultimately able to walk. So I owe a lot in a way, in a big way, to the Shriners Hospital and to the Shriners. But yet, you know, they a lot of these secret societies did good things but it was the things that people did, the behind-the-scenes activities that was so damning. And, you know, the Shriners are just a, that's more or less the fun part of Masonry. It's the Playboy group. And, you know, on the surface, they have a lot of fun and they do a lot of good things. But it's what happened behind the scenes that I have a problem with. And that's why I could never be a Shriner. They're not supposed to ask you, but I was asked several times growing up to join the Masonry and to become a Shriner. And I was tempted at different times because of what they had done for me. But something held me back. I knew just enough to be leery of conspiracy, and then I knew exactly why I did not want to become a member. So, you know, I have mixed emotions about discussing the Shriners because of what they have done for me. And they have that for thousands and thousands of young people. They, even back then in 1940, in the 40s, Shreveport was a predominantly segregated society, as was all the South. But yet, I can remember in those early, early years, I can remember blacks, Mexicans, Orientals, that they would have in that hospital. They would bring people from all over the world, and they would cure them or fix their limbs or whatever. And they did for everybody, you know. And but anyway.
Well, let me say something in response to that. What kind of world would it be if we did everything through our local Christian community, if we did not surrender 50 or 60 or 70% of our income to the government taxes, but which have been imposed on us through the power which our enemies have garnered via the secret societies? What kind of world would it be if we lived in a truly Christian world? And if we weren't oppressed and enslaved by our government and by the enemies of God? How much more could they have done for you? How much more it could the community have done for you? If they weren't doing for the heathen at the behest of Satan?
Exactly. You know, I think in the formation, early years in the founding of this country and on down through early history, you know, the churches played a predominant role. And I think they care of and they did a lot of things for the community and for the citizens that the government did not do. And slowly they gave up that right and authority to government and to outside forces that was more than willing to come in things in order to get the control of people and of our institutions. And that's where we went astray. But you're 100% correct. If we allowed the Christian communities to take the truth for and to do things for people, it was a far better world. More could get accomplished and with a lot less money. But honestly, I don't think we're going to see that again until the kingdom. And hopefully in the kingdom there won't be such things as polio and cancers and all these other things that we're playing with today. Nina, everybody up.
Well, I think that's just where the Jew wants everybody is to be in that kind of sympathetic mode of accepting a halfway mediocre. You know what it means to be what do you call it, Gerald? I'm trying to think of the word.
Lukewarm.
Yeah, lukewarm, mediocre, petty, shoddy, going halfway up the hill and being thankful. And it's not necessarily greed when it's for our own kinfolk, but it's kind of like the Jew wouldn't survive without sucking off of us, and so they had to make a governmental system that where we depended on to the extent where we would be just thankful enough that we had, you know, something halfway, and then we got stuck in that mind mode where... But obviously, what are there, 150 or 160 million or more non-Adamites living in this land right now? I don't know the figures. It might be, it's probably more like 250 million or 220 maybe out of the 320 million population. I'm just throwing that out. I don't know for sure exactly, but Yahweh knows. But it's definitely paralyzing. It's kind of like the Jew wants to paralyze us, take out our legs, and then give us two crane, what do you call them, crutches, and say, "See what we've done for you."
Hey, just real quick, the volume on that microphone is pretty high. Just FYI.
I'm sorry. I'm just probably a loud mouth.
No, not at all.
I think they use all those charities as a mask. And the people at the bottom levels, I believe, all think that they are doing well. And they are doing some good. But there's also a lot of evil being perpetrated in the names of those organizations. And whenever a Jew wants a job, he starts a charity.
And makes himself the head of it.
Yeah, actually, we were talking about this last night on that the head of B'nai B'rith in Montreal just pled guilty to possession of kiddie porn.
How surprising.
So he looks like he's going away for a little while.
Yeah, well, yeah. In Canada? But what's he going to, a country club for 3 years?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I guess when Zunda was up in Canada, they gave him a hard time. I guess he was in solitary for 2 years, they put him like in a meat locker type thing with no shoes and minimal clothes.
Yeah, well, I was in one of those. It's called the hole in federal prison.
Yeah. Yeah, down here in Florida, they block you in a box with no, you got like a little one by one little slits going out to the outside, and during the summertime it gets pretty hot.
In the prison I was
all day with push-ups.
The prison I was in was called a cubby hole. You know what that is, folks?
Sounds like a small box.
It's a ship.
A ship?
Yeah, I'm retired from the Navy.
Okay.
I was a chaplain's assistant, and we six men would sleep in cubby hole, you know, and there'd be six racks and a little what they call the cubby hole. And right across from me was there was this nigger who worked in dispersing, and I'd wake up in the middle of the night, and he'd be, you know, playing with himself, making a bunch of noise, and it was just sick, you know. And anyways, he ended up killing his little 6-month-old little nigglet. Just slammed him against the asphalt because he was stealing money from the Navy. And they went to go ask him questions, so he grabbed his little 6-month-old little black kid he had, and ran a couple blocks, slammed him against the asphalt, killed him, killed it. Yeah, so he's in federal prison.
That's intelligent. So instead of going away for a while, then he picked up a murder charge.
Well, yeah, their very existence is a violation of Yahweh's law anyways.
Their very existence, exactly. Someday the rest of our people will realize that. We'll see how happy they are with themselves.
Hey,
hopefully
Bruce.
They make up in time.
Bruce.
Sir?
Are you going to be able to head down this way anytime soon?
Well, I sure hope so, Gerald. I sure want to. I might be going up to see Bill in a couple days.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great. You're welcome.
Yeah.
Where are you headed? Syracuse again?
I'm going to Pennsylvania by York. But sometimes they send me up to Syracuse from there.
Yeah, I was going to say, York's a trip for me. Don't come here from York. That's kind of out of your way. That's like an 8-hour drive.
No, sometimes they shoot me up that highway. You're off the 65, aren't you, Gerald? Gerald?
65? No, I'm off of Interstate 20.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. And then Bill's, he's off of... Gosh, what's that freeway over there, Bill?
Freeway? That's an hour away, 80, the freeway.
85, isn't it?
Oh, 81. Goes, 81.
Oh, 81. That's right. I can't remember all those numbers. Probably Alzheimer's kicking in or something. I'm just kidding.
I'm a little far off 81.
I think it was about 50-minute drive if you go out from your place... 281,
mm-hmm.
Going toward Syracuse.
Yeah, well, you could go west and pick it up in Cortland at in 35 minutes.
Yeah, in a car.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Yeah, but this...
Well, try to... Bruce, try...
Sir? Sure.
To make it down here, Jocko's real anxious to meet a little bit.
Oh,
I'm gonna bring I'm gonna bring Samson down to meet Jocko. I hope this year, and maybe a little mustard or something.
Yeah,
I'm right. Just kidding, Gerald. I'm just kidding.
Soy sauce.
He doesn't mean it, Gerald.
Heart attack. I know. Jocko would have an attack if he was to see Samson.
He's got to be over 40 pounds by now. He's getting big, and he could put his paws up and his head's over the kitchen counter, and we got to start pushing the food back and stuff like that. My mother would be cooking dinner, and all of a sudden she got... Got a dog's head poking up right next to her, and he's like a 3-month-old in a 16-month-old body, right? Yeah, you know what I mean, like a big kid. And he's kind of awkward and clumsy for that reason too.
And he's not spoiled at all.
And he's probably not halfway to where he's going to get.
Well, what else are we going to talk about tonight, guys? Doesn't look like anybody else is going to call in.
Well, tell me about it.
I wish
this
they would.
Be the first again, you're open forum on our own network, and it's a bomb. I mean, it's not a bomb because you guys are all good guys, but we need more than a couple ideas, right?
I can tell you about a love letter I got today.
A love letter?
Oh yes, it was heartwarming. They have in the local paper here. I've been posting a lot of very popular blogs, and they had something yesterday about the NAACP doing some kind of voter drive against the Tea Party. So, anyways. I'm not from neither one of those, but I put some posts in there with some connections to One was a anti-MLK site, and another one was a what was that? Oh yeah, the Jews in the slave trade, and another one was how the NAACP was financed by Jacob Schiff, and that it was originally started up by a bunch of Jews, and then some woman sent me an email through this newspaper saying that that need to be visited by federal authorities. Kind of a heartwarming little letter for me today.
She sent you that letter?
Yeah.
She put it in the paper?
No.
Why?
No,
because you're repeating factual history? You need to be visited by federal authorities?
Yeah, she's just an idiot.
Well, yeah, I would respond to that. Yeah, you know, like, what's illegal about history? What is the truth hurt? That's bad? Yeah, I would have to sit down and respond to that and just expose her hypocrisy totally. I mean, that's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, they're like cockroaches.
Well, you know,
go ahead.
You know, what I find interesting that they don't seem to understand is the fact that the original board of directors of the NAACP didn't contain one nigger. It was all Jews.
Jews.
And what I want to ask the blacks is, you know, why in the same hell do you have an organization, rights, headed by such a Jew who's on the board of directors? You know, why can't you do your own board of directors?
You should write back and ask her if she thinks the NKVD is a U.S. federal authority. That's what you should write.
Yeah, but the
only
thing
is, I think I would probably ask her. I'd ask her if she thought the OGPU and the NKVD were U.S. government agencies.
Yeah, the only thing is that the Zionist ass rag is they're the kind of people that would probably change the wording around, and so I'm just gonna ignore her and just keep posting.
Well, in reality, most Jews would like the NKVD and the OGPU to be U.S. government agencies. There's no doubt, but they're not.
Yeah, actually, anyway. It's called the DOJ.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, I made a whole slew of, actually for the last year or so, very popular posts about how the Holocaust was a farce and who really runs the show, and so yeah, I've gotten a couple of those love letters.
But, well, you know, when you can curse God and Christ, but you can't curse a Jew in this country, you know who runs the show, right?
Yeah. Yeah, what's interesting is that actually, I don't attribute it to myself, but there's a lot of people who have come out of the woodwork and are starting to say the same thing that I am. And, there's some people that are just, they're almost is at the cusp of dual seed line.
Yeah, well, good, because that's... You know, the truth is going to manifest itself.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, the blog post on this particular newspaper was listed by the ADL because of all the hate speech that was on it.
I'm really scared.
The ADL, they're the biggest perpetrators of hate speech.
Oh yeah. Yeah, they actually, someone should do a citizen's arrest on Abe Foxman for inciting hate against Germans. Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm going to a truck.
They spouted nothing but hate speech for nearly 100 years.
I go to a truck stop, I'll see a candy bar go up 50 cents in 1 week, and I go to the cashier and I say, when the goddamn Jews buy this place? And that kind of breaks the ice.
If anybody wants to talk, please right-click your own name and click Request Talk Power. I know it's going to be a while before everybody gets used to this venue.
Yeah, so that was pretty neat talking to the guy today, and he's translating the sites into different languages.
Translating what into different languages?
He's translating the Christogenia into another language.
Oh, you're talking about Rudolph?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Rudolph Schutz, he'll be here on occasion during the day. He's in England, so he won't be here this week on these programs. The site I sponsor for him is ukoi.christogenia.org. He works pretty hard, so he doesn't get the time to spend on it that he would like to. He is a remnant of the old Yukoi group, but Rudolph is an extremely solid individual. He is no Jonathan Williams. He's nothing like those other clowns. He's a good man, and he has been translating my papers and Clifton's into Slovak for several years now. He's done maybe Clifton's first 30 or 40 teaching letters and a bunch of our other pamphlets. And translated them into Slovak. I mean, Slovak has a small audience, but everything helps, right?
Absolutely.
And Barr, that has been here on occasion and has been in the talk show programs on occasion, he just asked me for permission to translate a lot of our papers into French. And let me tell you something. Nobody's got to ask us for permission to translate any of our papers. And that, I think I can safely speak for Clifton, too. And that's why I say ours and not mine, because I'm sure that Clifton would be honored if anybody wanted to translate any of our papers into another language.
So what's it? Go ahead.
And Barr wants to translate some of our papers into French, and he's entirely free to do that.
I'm waiting for the fire translation, Bill.
What translation?
The fire translation.
Yeah, right.
Gonna translate a bunch of these kites into ash.
The final translation. Well, that's all they're going to get converted to, you know, that these Judeo-Christians are waiting for this big conversion of Jews at the end, and all they're going to be converted into is ashes.
Somebody said that the only Holocaust that ever happened was in 1978 on NBC. When
yeah, right.
The miniseries.
Well, the real Holocaust is the Holocaust of Ukrainians and other ethnic and other Russian Christians in the 1917 to 19 whenever. I don't know when it ended. When did it end? When did Stalin's reign of terror end?
Actually, it's still going on.
In the late 40s. Yeah, right. It's still going on. Exactly.
You know, yesterday I was walking to a restroom at a rest stop in Ohio, and I saw a kike with his little Mohammed cap on, you know, walking towards the restroom. And you know, it's just like looking at the devil. I mean, they're so arrogant. They're a different creature altogether. They're not related with us at all. And another time I saw a kike up in New York there at a rest stop. And he looked at me and I looked at it, and you could just tell it was a devil in skin walking around. That's all they are.
Well, that's exactly all they are. They're walking devils. There's no doubt in my mind. Contrary to all men and the open defiance of our God.
And wouldn't you say, Bill, that these kikes, this dirty, filthy, rotten rat blood that's been miscegenating with our folks for a long time, wouldn't you say that, I mean, they're unconsciously, how can I say it? Well, if you look around and you see all the race mixing going on, like I was a former race mixer through my own stupid lusts and youth and vanity, but I mean to say, they really want to pollute our pure blood, you know? And they don't care what it's with, just so it's not white.
Well, exactly. Yeah. Every kite's nightmare is a white couple having white babies. As long as there's one white couple having white babies somewhere in this world, then Satan's dominion is threatened.
Yeah, because I've seen questionable marriages and other members of my family where, you know, like the grandfather molested the grandchild, you know. Not, you know, my brother married this one woman and her father molested the grandchild. And just looking at it, you can tell it had some of that, you know, not Adamic blood in it. And it's like, wow. Without being racially aware, I don't see how people could ever come across Israel identity.
Your car's been dropping in and out all night. I'm starting to get worried. I hope it's his cable connection. That poor guy's been dropped from here about 5 times tonight. It's storming in New York, though. We had electrical storms. I'm surprised I'm still here because there was a lot of thunder and lightning for the first 30 minutes of this program.
Hey, did anyone happen to hear what happened off the coast of Gaza last night?
No, I didn't. I heard there was something that happened in Palestine today, but I didn't catch what it was.
There was a humanitarian aid flotilla of 6 boats that was heading from Turkey to Gaza, bringing humanitarian aid, and just as they were coming into the blockade around Gaza, these Israeli commandos dropped out of helicopters and pulled up alongside and fast boats, and they killed 10 of the people bringing the humanitarian aid, and now 30 others were injured.
Oh, another big public relations crew for the
public relations
crew for the Jews, huh? They weren't Southern Evangelicals by any chance, were they? Or Yankee Baptists, maybe. That would be nice.
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking maybe we could do the same thing to the Cubans coming over, or the Haitians.
The Jews would be up in a dither. You would never believe it. You know, there would be no end to the condemnation and the demonstrations.
Well, the Somalian busloads of niggers they ship into... in the middle class white towns.
Yeah. Somebody's saying the death toll's up to 20, I guess. But, well, that would be just wonderful. I hope they were all stupid Yankee Baptists. I mean, I know it sounds like a terrible thing to say, but our people have to wake up that they are Satan. And how many of us have to die before our people realize that? They are the Antichrist.
Actually, some of these pulpit bastards are the Antichrist these days. There's a couple of churches around here. There's one where they're having a get-together for a PFLAG gathering. The parents and friends of lesbians and gays.
Oh, wonderful.
It gets even better. And then there's a gay men's choir that's going around singing. Some in the different so-called, you know, Christian churches are advertising it amongest one another.
Snowball is rolling downhill faster all the time.
Yeah.
And up speed every day.
I wonder, a gay group of men singing, do they sing in a cappella?
I'd like them to sing castrato.
Yeah, all tenor. Boy tenor. Tenor voices.
The only cure for it is to castrate them, but it's from
boy
the
soprano.
Yeah, they all sell brownies outside, a bunch of fudge pushers.
And then this is the kind of stuff that's being pushed in the churches nowadays. Just it's unfreaking believable.
Love the homo, love the abortionist. It's
all just
one big love fest, and we're just a bunch of haters.
And the child molesters.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Ambler.
Why can't we just
there was the forefront of every single
person. No, they always put that enmity there for a purpose.
Well, I'd like to know who
he does prove that their prophecy is fulfilling itself.
I'd like to know who the intruders were last night. That's what I'd like to know. Were they Baptists? Were they Catholics? Were they
white
idiots? Male. They, of course they were idiots. Let me see.
I think they might have been so we can find out here.
Gaza fishing boat blown up.
While he's looking that up. Bill, while he's looking that up, I just want to say, you know, your premiere program tonight, I will have to say that it is a big success because the chat room is going just like TalkShoe, and the people that want to call in are able to call in. I suspect there are people out there that still don't have their headphones. And if I can do it and get set up, anybody can do it. So I urge everybody.
That's Michael
is causing a feedback.
Yeah,
but if I can do it, any can do it. Yeah. Y'all, you know, everybody needs to go ahead and do this because it's fun. And, you know, I'm in on it, and I'm getting closer to doing my next program. I haven't done a program on the Tuesday Night Fellowship, but I've got one coming up in a few weeks, and I want to get back into the group. And this is going to be an excellent server for doing those programs because no one is crashing. We don't have to deal with all of that. Evidently, it's going to be a user-friendly system. And I think Bill has done an excellent job in getting all this set up for us. And, you know, TalkShoe, pardon my French, but TalkShoe can go to hell. Because I've had my hell in dealing with them over the last several months. And I just, I'm so thankful that we've got an avenue now that we can use, and I want to see all you people out there in that chat room to take advantage of this because it's here for all of us. And I know some of you don't want to talk on the, but at the same time, there's a lot of you do and can, and I'd like to see everybody get set up where you can have input. On this. So I just wanted to say that, but I am so thrilled of this. It's working. You know, there's a little thing in there we need to get straightened out, but, by and large, it is a big success. I think tonight is a tremendous success. So, you know, I wish we could all applaud and give Bill give him the claps, but, anyway, he's done a great job and I'm thankful.
I don't think he wants to get the clap. but I agree with Gerald. I agree, Gerald. Amen.
Well, hopefully we'll be able to make a good run at it and have a good thing going and a good community. I mean, we have a good community. It's you know, this is going to be virtually troll free. The pitfall is it'll be a little harder for new people to find us. But 99% of the new people that found us on TalkShoe were just troublemakers anyway. That's the way I look at it.
Most of the solid new people come in as referrals, generally.
Right, exactly.
Somebody else.
Most of them are referrals or people that find my site or Eli's site or Clifton's site.
And they spend a little time in the forum, or they spend a little time communicating by email, and get to be known somewhat that way.
Yeah, and that's pretty much.
Well, you know, I have a suggestion. I have a suggestion. It's been made before, but I'd like to make it again. If everybody that signed up would find one person to bring into this, you know, we could double our participation. And, you know, that's not as hard as it sounds. All of us know people. You know, we might, each of us might know somebody that's a C. Iverson that's not participating in these programs. And I challenge y'all. I think all of you ought to make a concentrated effort to try to bring one person in on these programs. And that would make a tremendous difference for us. And also, while I've got the floor, I want to remind everybody that tomorrow night is going to be in this on this same server. And I urge everybody to come in and participate tomorrow night and give the host your support, because we all need to take advantage of this. So anyway, that's enough. I get paid for doing all this.
I don't know who pays you, but I wish they'd pay me too. I'm just kidding. I think this will grow on its own, and hopefully, you know, and this is here 24/7, and usually there's somebody here. I mean, every time I've come to the server, I'll stop in during the day. I mean, I got work to do too, and there's somebody here every evening, and there's usually somebody here during the day. Even if they're just lurking, waiting for people to show up or whatever.
Yeah, this chat server is definitely a big success in my eyes. I didn't want to get on here and talk too much this evening. I'm going to be hosting the Crystalea show tomorrow. And got a lot to talk about and some pretty appropriate topics. Going to be talking about our current relationships with one another, the marriage situations with many of us, and the fellowship in general. And yes, Gerald, I actually even wanted to touch on the exact same thing that you had mentioned. Concerning, you know, trying to bring at least one more person to one of these shows.
Yeah, like what that book you're reading with Sword Brethren, Bill?
Yeah, that's the Webster.
Yeah, somebody out there, somebody listening right now, they can take that book and just do a recording of the entire book and make the audio available. I mean, that would be great. Just, I mean, you can do it today or tomorrow. And or Gerald's books. That would be great to put those in audio format, Gerald. And if I get
That's
down
a
there
big
and
book, Bruce.
What's that?
It's oh, a big book.
Well, we have a big father, so that's no problem. We can, I mean, what would it take? Like, what, 12 hours of reading or something? What do you think,
you
Pilgrim?
Oh, I don't know.
Well, it's 352 pages, and Brian and I have covered chapter one in 3 hours. I mean, we have a lot of comments and things interjected also, but...
Yeah, but I don't see a whole lot of
Bruce,
audio. Oh, I'm sorry, Gerald.
Bruce, I thought you were coming down and get set up, and you were going to put a lot of my books in audio form.
Yahweh willing, that's what I wouldn't mind doing that if Yahweh wants me to do that, Gerald. Believe me. But there's a lot of...
Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Bill.
It was Turkish Muslims that had this, and an aid organization tied to the Turkish government that were running this aid flotilla to the Gaza Strip that the Israelis ransacked and shot up a bunch of people and blockaded the ships from getting in.
Yeah, there were quite a few activists from various countries, including Ireland and the United States, on board, too.
Yeah, I'm just skimming the surface of this BBC article. And that's all the BBC article does, is skim the surface anyway, so. But they say up to 600 mostly Turkish passengers on these ships. That's a lot of people.
Is that a rehash of the USS Liberty attack, huh?
Well, I don't think it's anything like that, but it's, you know, it's a, it shows you the lengths that the Jews will go to, strangle their enemy when they won't let something that's clearly, humanitarian aid into a war zone.
Yeah, I mean, come on, concrete, for crying out loud. What are they gonna do, you know, hit them over the head with a bag of concrete? Give me a break.
It was three cargo ships and three passenger ships.
Looks like Desmond Tutu was involved. Too bad they didn't take him out. But I think he was just one of the backers.
Yeah, he's not actually going to stick his neck out.
Yeah. One can only dream.
Victor, what is wrong with your connection? Oh, Pro Thing's finally going to pipe up. He's been here for 4 days. He hasn't said a word here.
Oh, Mike from Pro Thing's on here.
Hey, hey guys, Mike. How's it going?
Hey, Mike.
It's about time you said something here. I mean, I saw you here 4 days in a row, but you never said a word. You were working.
Oh, yeah. To get my office set up, I'm running a live feed on the front of ProThink now. I decided, since I actually have a room dedicated to the office now, that I'm going to run a live feed, like an anti-Jew reality show.
Okay.
You like a sitcom?
That's cool. Watching that's a great idea. Like a sitcom. Yeah. So I'm live right now.
What software are you using
to do that? Huh?
What software are you using to do that?
It's Ustream.tv. It's actually the embedded players right on the front of ProThink.org right now.
Okay. I'm
live on here right now.
Great.
Absolutely. That's a fantastic idea.
What do you want to talk about?
Me? I heard you guys kind of jumped on here. I think I was jumping in the middle of this Gaza Flotilla thing, right?
Yeah, we were just bantering about it.
That toll's at 20.
That is just awesome. Not really awesome that people are getting killed, but awesome because, you know what, Israel is really sticking its foot in the mud against the liberal activists, the Palestinian activists there.
Yeah, they're it's a real bad public relations move for them, I believe.
Yeah.
Well, I think they're just going to show that how much they don't care at this point, and you know how much they're able to throw their weight around without giving a damn what anybody else thinks.
But, well, their arrogance is quantified by the belief that by the confidence they have in their grip on power. The more confident they are that they're in control, the more arrogant they become. There's no doubt.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's just hilarious.
You know, I wouldn't...
That, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I wouldn't get too upset over it if I were y'all, because I'm sure that our government is going to send a strong protest.
Yeah, that might happen, but you know, one of the dumbest things I've seen out of this whole incident so far is the fact when all the threats were going around that Israel was going to do something to these people. Hey, I got to give Israel credit. It was stated, it stood up to the words that they said they were going to do. They got on a boat and said, "Hey, we're going to kick these people's butt to come in," and they did it. Meanwhile, the government of Turkey, who all these ships were registered to as Turkey civilian vessels, that if Israel touches, there's going to be retaliation. So what do these dumb butts do over there in Turkey? They cry and say, we're withdrawing our embassy from Israel. We're going to cry to the UN. You mean the same UN that anytime anything critical said against Israel, the U.S. just vetoes anything away anyway? What kind of retaliation is that?
You know, it's another thing about the UN is that when they had the Secretary General was Kofi Annan, the word Kofi is Hebrew for monkey. they put him there.
Why am I not surprised?
Yeah, no doubt.
Kofi is the Hebrew, is the Yiddish Hebrew word for monkey.
Probably Tutu is too.
Yeah, maybe he wears a tutu.
And Mandela.
Well, I'm sure they're all cross-dressers. They're all omnisexual.
Mandela singing that Kill the Boer song alongside that kike.
Yeah, Mike, it's probably like a clown going in from one dressing room to another clown dressing room, right?
Yeah. How come the volume sounds so much different on here? Am I sounding all right on here?
You sound fine.
Okay. Because Bruce comes in like super loud and Bill comes in really quiet.
Well, because Bill talks away from his mic most of the time because he's always doing something else, and Bruce has his mic a little too hot, that's all.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
Yeah, you can right click on their name and change the volume of each person.
Oh, wow. This has got all...
Yeah, it's got all the bells and whistles, man. And it sounds so much better because you're dealing with the higher and lower frequency levels being transmitted across the internet instead of through the phone.
Yeah, what's the phone?
That's a very narrow bandwidth.
I have Bruce set on negative 10 decibels, and he still comes in louder than almost everybody else.
Yeah, I got him on, like, negative 13, I think.
So, in other words, Bruce
will
change your volume.
Bruce is a big man.
He's got a very commanding voice. Hey, you guys, I got to meet some of my neighbors up. Very interesting ordeal.
Oh,
was it a
new
meeting
place?
Or a confrontation?
Huh?
Was it a meeting or a confrontation?
No, not a confrontation. One of them was having a rummage sale on Saturday, and so me and the wife stopped over there and office chair I bought for my office and our RV. So I decided, let's go over to that rummage sale and see if they got anything interesting, table or chairs or maybe a couch or something. And we got over there and they had a whole bunch of land, like 40 chickens, a couple goats and everything, and cool. And they were talking about how they like to live organically, a real nice white family would. They're like, well, yeah, my the husband, I guess, he drives truck for a living as well, which is what I was gonna bring up to Bruce. I'll talk to you about that later. But so they're like, yeah, he's having a birthday. Today was his birthday. You guys come over. So, all right, cool. Well, we went over there, and they had, like, four other families area over there. Every one of them had at least four kids. One guy had seven and another one on the way, and white families. One guy that had seven was from down up here because this is the last place you could get off the front and back. In America. And so I'm talking to these guys, and I'm keeping real low key on any political stuff. Feelers out to everybody in the area. I'm talking to the guy outside, and all of a sudden, throw a little hook out there, and I'm like, I'm trying to fight the whole immigration issue right now. And he's like, there's this one guy I listened to on his talk show that, says some pretty good things about the immigration issue. This guy's name is Alex Jones. And sure enough, everybody there knew about Alex Jones. And, that's what level they were at, though. It was like whatever Alex Jones is at. Obviously that wasn't the sole person they listened to, but they were in the anti-New World Order crowd, very Christian-minded. A lot of them considered Catholics. But it's at least a very good start. It's not just... people buying everything that's being sold, and it was good to see that they're at least at that level already, That was pretty promising to see the whole group of new people we meet, they're all at least at the Alex Jones level. I didn't go any further than that, I just kind of warmed up to him, I met the guy, I know, blah, 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 and say anything else. Didn't say I had a website or nothing like that. They didn't even know I have, you know, the bus was here or nothing because I can't. It'll be very interesting. Because the whole entire area, and I'm going to be going to a party in the local area from another guy I met in a grocery store who was carrying a sidearm. And I go, well, it's good to see you invoking your Second Amendment rights. He's like, I didn't know I could until recently. Now that I know I could, I'm doing it all the time. And turns out he's, you know, party guy. I don't know if they're even at that. Republican-minded people that are disgruntled with Obama or something, but I'll see how that group is going. Slowly but surely, get everybody kind of lifted up. I'll just throw a little here, a little there, and, oh, did you hear about this, you know? See how it works.
If I come up there, Mike, we're going to make a big, huge sign that says, first we're going to go to Home Depot and buy some tongue and groove wood. You know, some, or find some used tongue and groove wood, and we're going to put it right in front of that hotel, right on Lake Superior, where a bunch of lesbos run a hotel, and we're going to put a big sign across the street that says, stay at the Dyke Hotel. Free tongue and groove wood.
Well, yeah, I plan on strategically not showing my hand with these people up here until, well, not at all until they're actually warmed up. You know, I bring them through all the stages, you know, like, well, check this out, check this out, you know. Hey, did you hear about the Zionist stuff? And then go from there, and sooner or later work up to the point, well, Jews aren't God's chosen people. Sorry, real, just inch there so I can actually make sure that the seed put in really good fertilizer and then it's watered and got enough sunlight accurately to grow it without killing the plant. But yeah, I definitely want to get to a point where I got this whole local area ready to
rise up in arms.
Yeah, you know, something like that. You know?
Mike, did you happen to catch that Alex Jones said that his father was a Jewish professor of botany in Texas?
Yeah, I saw that video actually on Podblank, now that you mentioned it. A lot of people had thought that he was basically, the way he worded it, it sounded like it was his dad, but then it wasn't his dad or something like that. There's no doubt that, you know, especially everybody that's in here knows that Alex Jones is not nailed on who's what, but
he's admitted being non-white.
Yeah, yeah. You know, but, you know, when it comes down to at least breaking the ice on people out there, I'm just giving the guy a benefit of the doubt. Just looking back from what he's semi-decent at breaking the ice for people not to have blind trust in the media. And there's a semi-decent platform you can work with, at least.
He's not even a halfway house, though. He might be a quarterway house.
Yeah, yeah. I'm trying not to give the guy hardly any credit at all, except for the fact that there is issues, obviously. He's against the privately owned Fed Reserve. 9/11 is an issue. The vaccine. There's certain issues that you go, okay, well, he's giving you this, but he's obviously selling you down the river on other things. But, yeah, you know, money they've put out there to actually retain credibility and do damage employing him could ultimately backfire if you work from learning from him.
You're cutting out about a half of the time you're talking, Mike.
Yeah, I got a really crappy mic here.
Oh, I would never call you that.
Are you using voice activation there, Mike?
No, I'm not. For some reason, this sound card that's built on the motherboard of this tower I'm using, even when I use my studio mic, it is just, I got the thing cranked up in the control panel, and it, for some reason, it just is so quiet on my headset mic and my studio mic, so I don't know what the deal with it is.
Why, you think it's just a junk sound card, or I'm sure you've updated the drivers and stuff, right?
Yeah. It's one of these all-in-one motherboards. It's got the built-on video, the built-on soundboard. I don't have additional PCI cards or express cards for any video or sound.
Gotcha. That explains it.
So, yeah, it'll be time to upgrade sooner or later. Plus, I really want to get a decent mic, so I'll have to get one by the time I work on the next film. But right now, now that I got an office, like I said, I was going to, I'm getting the Missing Link bus tour video knocked out because, well, a lot of people donated to that and wanted to see where their money was spent for the tour. So I want to show everybody the condensed version of the 30 hours of footage we took traveling around the country in the bus that Bruce had put together, you know, and show them what we did, you know.
When did you say you're going to have that out?
If I really bust some tail, like I said, I'm in a new house, so there's a lot of stuff the wife's dragging me around by the hair to do. But if I actually get some time up here, unadulterated, I should have it done within the next week or two. I got quite a bit of stuff coming up here, but hopefully in the next 2 weeks to have that done. I've had the trailer done for a while. The trailer's been done. It's on my activation activism site on ProThink. I got a great video, which I don't know how Bruce is going to feel about it, but we were washing the bus down when we first got down to pick the bus up, and Bruce dancing in the street with the water hose. It's excellent footage.
Yeah, I have to tell you, Mike, I really like your work, man. Good job.
Yeah, just doing my part, that's all.
I wish Ben Bernanke was there so I could stick it somewhere.
Hey, what's up with the Bilderberg meeting group that's supposed to be coming up soon?
I don't keep track of them.
Yeah, I actually stopped keeping track of them myself.
Yeah, I did too, but I figured it was coming up and filter on to be interesting to see what they're actually talking about.
Well, I'm waiting for my invitation to the next Bohemian Grove party.
Oh, man. Remember, the Bohemian Grove
I even
is
have
Jewish
a,
rite.
I even have an owl, a stuffed owl I'm going to take with me.
Yeah, you'd probably get admittance into the Bohemian Grove a lot better if you scrap the owl and dress up as a little 13-year-old boy.
Like Living Dangerously, do you?
It'd be hard to get this body into a 13-year-old boy.
Well, then go as a 13-year-old boy dressed up like an owl.
Yeah, it'd be wonderful if we had a live video of Barney Frank, the financial advisor, what he did to those boys in Boys Town.
Yeah. Yeah,
no, that's
our
idea.
That
would be too much.
I can't even imagine how that guy is.
You know, around.
Yeah, it is pretty.
You know, the thing that amazes me the most is all of these congressmen and senators that are up in Washington. And they turn a deaf eye and a deaf ear and a blind eye to all of this crap that's going on as though they don't even know it's existing. And you know they've got to know. And it just amazes me that no one them to account
on this.
Well, it's clearly a willful ignorance.
And it's clear that we call them to account on it.
Oh, Yahweh's going to call them to account on it. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I don't want to brag. I don't want to beat my chest. But a few weeks, and it's still on the front page of Christogenia, but I think it slipped down to, if you go all the way down to the bottom and you got to click on the 2, I think. No, it's at the very bottom of the front page of Christogenia. I saw this video on YouTube, and it was Jack Murtha, and he called the voice vote, and he lost the voice vote by a tremendous amount, like one A and a whole room full of nays. And he stood there, and he banged the gavel, and he said, the A's have it. And that video came off YouTube, and it's on the front page of my site. And I wrote, will someone please arrest this man? Who in government today has the backbone to hold him accountable for these blatant crimes? Do Americans not care about the tyranny of certain progressive elements in politics? Because this was just blatant stealing a voice vote in the House, is exactly what he did. And I think it was Sensenbrenner tried to speak up against him, and he just knocked him down. But, well, a few weeks later, I think it was 2 weeks later, Jack Murtha was dead. And Yahweh kills a man, I believe. Yeah, Yahweh's judgment comes against a man at the peak of his arrogance. And I think that Jack Murtha should be an example of that.
Yeah, if anybody hasn't watched that, amen. They should. It was really probably about a minute or two long, but it was that was very revealing. It was unbelievable. He did that. It's out of sight. Mike, you had that. I watched your was that you that was talking with Sensenbrenner?
Yeah.
Video. Yeah, give me a rundown on that. If anybody hasn't watched that, what was going on there? Where did that take place, and what was the occasion that you happened to be there doing that? I didn't aware of what that was, but it was interesting.
Well, Congressman Sensenbrenner was, obviously a local congressman in where I was living at the time for the Milwaukee area. And he was also the guy that introduced the bill for the Real ID Act. He was also the guy that introduced the Patriot Act for Michael Chertoff in the Congress. He was also the guy that slammed his gavel down when it came to reauthoring the Patriot Act and said he didn't want to hear any of the other congressmen cry and moan about reauthoring it, and said it's just going to get reauthored anyways. Well, he was doing these town hall meetings. This was back, before everybody started hitting the town hall meetings up, so it was real easy to do because there was like a whopping 8 people there when I did that. But I came there and I says, hey, look at all this evidence about 9/11, blah, blah, blah. And I says, you are the one that was responsible for introducing the Patriot Act. And if you notice in the video, I had that guy, it seemed like he was really soiling himself over his mouth, and he was just like, what I was expecting
man,
to hear.
Man, he looked like the face of evil itself when you were there talking to him. He was looking at you like he would have stared dirt, sir. A death ray out of his eyeballs at you. He really laid it on him. That was great.
Hey, you know what I was thinking?
Was,
he was thinking.
That was a long thing. You had everything all in order there, and he just blew him away, I think. Had him.
I was thinking that he was probably thinking other than soiling himself at the time. Because I was looking at him, and I was locked up for a little while myself, so I've seen what pedophiles look like and how they act. And I'm looking at him, and guy, he looks like such a pedophile, and I'm thinking, he's thinking to himself, are these little boys worth this mess?
that's a good document bit of evidence against about what they're doing. And you mean he didn't really deny anything?
No, he couldn't.
He couldn't. And you told what you told him about Chertoff, what the name means, and his mother. Reiterate that if you would.
I told them about Chertoff. Yeah. I told them about Fox News catching Mossad with bombs in their trucks. I told them that Chertoff's family have found Israel. His grandfather was one of the key figures in the Bolshevik Revolution that killed 60 million Russians. I said that, to go instant messaging, warning all these Jews in New York not to go to that lower Manhattan that day. And this is the Chertoff's same thing mother? I told... And Chertoff's mother was one of the, or his parents are one of some of the founding people that helped found Israel, the state. His grandfather had immigrated back over here from the Bolshevik Revolution. His sister is the head of the Woman Zionist Organization. And his uncle, Mordecai, is one of the only and few people that, you know, because only a very select group of rabbis can actually edit the Talmud. And his uncle is one of the key people that can do that.
Here he is taking care of the needs over here now.
Hmm? Yeah. What the last name in Russian, Chertoff, means son of the devil.
I haven't seen that rat face around. I wonder where that rat is.
I think he had enough heat put on him. I think I honestly think that there was enough heat and awareness that I think they figured his cover was blown, and so they brought this Butch Dyke Napolitano in to replace him.
Just another rat, huh?
Yeah, another rat, but more of a liberal, you know, instead of a neocon, more of a communist lesbian dyke rat instead of a manly Bolshevik rat.
Like the ones that sent the troops against the people down there at Waco.
Yeah.
Her name,
yeah.
Janet Reno, my God, she was a, what a hideous, they did it for the children.
Well, and her actions just made her even uglier.
Yeah, oh, man, what a vile creature.
That's just like this Kagan woman.
Oh, she's right, Janet Reno's in the same mold as her. They have the same philosophies, and apparently they wear it externally. The suit jacket, the I want to be a man, the big cigar in the mouth, the whole nine yards.
Yeah, the foot haircut. Yes, exactly.
Serious cases of penis envy. Yes, they're both absolute lesbian whores.
I think they're past the envy point. I think they actually mentally think they have a bigger one than any man out there.
They look like it.
Well, if Yahweh has a sense of humor, when they go to hell, they'll be fitted with 75-pound penises, and they'll have to carry them anywhere they go.
I'll bet they schedule prostate exams for themselves.
Maybe about 12 feet long, so they'll never be able to reach the ends of them.
And they'll make them pee gallstones out.
Yes.
Oh, that kind of reminds me. Oh, yeah, never mind.
This is the sadomasochist hour. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. Yeah, but this is
the wishful thinker's hour.
Yeah, no kidding. It's like that Justice Ginsburg, too. She was actually quoted as saying that every day that she walks into the Supreme Court, she makes sure she gets her inspiration from the Talmud.
Right, it's disgusting. And you know, most mainstream Christians would hear that and say, oh, she's so religious. And they don't have the slightest idea.
Yeah, that's sick. I know I just recently read something where I think it was 2003 or 2005, there was something, some kind of conference that was put together for the Supreme Court justices to start actually making judgments based on Talmudic law.
They have been. It's called case law. As far as I'm concerned, they've been doing it for at least 80 years.
Since 1916 or something like that, right?
Well, Well, it started to come into vogue in the Supreme Court with Louis Brandeis, I believe.
That's right.
But I think it took a few years. It was resisted for a while in some legal circles, from what I understand. And it took a few years to solidify its control over the court system. The case law idea. And once upon a time, every case was measured against the merits of its merits according to the Constitution. Now they don't even look at the Constitution. They only look at the case law. Who needs the Constitution? We have all this case law that tells us how to interpret it. And if you read the Mishnah, which is part of the Talmud, the book basically exists. It's a book of case law. And all of these situations are brought up, are presented. And the rabbis write decisions. And the decisions are basically explanations of how to get around the biblical law and to justify all kinds of sin. And that's exactly what it is. And that's what the Talmud is. The Mishnah, anyway. That's exactly what it is. And it's the forerunner to case law. Because whenever you had the Jews judging anything, that's what they're going to use. That is the reflection of what they are. And that's what you're going to end up with. You're going to end up with the Talmud all over again. And that's what we have today in the American legal system.
Protocols of method for circumventing God's law.
Right on, David.
You justify all kinds of foul and perverted things in the Mishnah, too. It's okay to have sex with little boys and little girls. It's perfectly fine because God restores their hymens, they claim.
Yeah.
If they're under 9, then God will restore their hymens before they're married.
Under 3 or 3.
Yeah,
under,
something like
2.
That. Some ridiculous age like that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the girls are 3 and the boys 9.
If anything with 2 legs and a head on shoulders could think like that.
Well, you know, they're omnisexual beasts. They're devils in human flesh. There's no doubt.
What's truly disgusting is they actually give a reasoning as to why they believe a 3-year-old's hymen grows back, because every time they violate these little girls, they bleed. So that if they're bleeding, they obviously must be re-rupturing a regenerated hymen.
Well, not only that, but the allotment for them to sleep with little boys too.
Yeah, little boys up to 9 years old in a day, and that's all because they claim. Yeah, these are your wonderful medical doctors that after a boy turns 9 years old and a day, he is sexually mature, and therefore. Is considered a consenting adult, and therefore it is then illegal. Just absolutely sick.
Well, they do run NAMBLA. What is that guy, Arnold Schoen, the Jew that run NAMBLA? I would love to see their little member. Go, guess what the 2 biggest fag cities that they got NAMBLA headquartered out of? I'll give you guys any one of you guys 2 guesses or 1 guess for each of the 2 cities.
I know one of them is Wisconsin.
San Francisco.
Francisco,
New York.
One.
Guessing for what?
New York City.
New York and San Fran. You guys called that one right.
New York. What's the big fag city in Wisconsin I hear about? Is it Green Bay? It's a big fag city.
Madison.
Yeah. Madison.
Madison.
Madison, yeah.
That's like Harrisburg here, guys, in Pennsylvania. I call that the freaking San Francisco of the East Coast. It's disgusting.
I don't know. I've been to Greenwich Village. It's pretty bad. I mean, it's been 15 years. Well, maybe about 18 or 19 since I've been there, but it's pretty bad.
Well, the newly deposed mayor of Harrisburg had been on an unprecedented 10 terms, and he was a blatant fag. Did all he could to elevate the level of faggotry in that city.
Voted for them so they get whatever they deserve. They deserve whatever they get, I mean. Incredible that Christians could vote for something like that.
Oh, because he made the city so pretty.
Nothing is more prettier than Yahweh's nature. Care what a fag dresses.
Amen.
Yeah, well, they deserve whatever they get. And we wonder why our nation's being judged. That's the mentality. In so many places, that's the mentality.
Yeah, every time I go to Portland, I tell the folks there, hey, you folks still have a queer mayor?
Yeah, you know, I was speaking with a relative this weekend who is mentality for average America out there, running down all of the celebrities that think of or crosses through their life. We're running down the list. They like Kobe Bryant. Forget the fact that he's a Negro. But I said, well, oh, you mean the molester, the criminal molester? No, that doesn't matter. What about Michael Jackson? Pedophile. Well, that's his private life. So he's contributed a lot of good to the world. What about this Charlie Sheen, like, on this TV show, who is sort of a druggy, whoremonger kind of Hollywood sleaze type? Well, that's his private life. And all the way down the line, it was like, and this person's a Catholic. I said, oh, does your church take that stand? I said, I guess they must, because the priests are more or less molesting these boys in their own time, right? That's their private life? Is that how they think? No, they don't think that way.
Oh, but no, they don't think that way.
It's like they don't care. They don't care. As long as they are getting something they want from this individual, they couldn't care less what that individual is or what that individual does.
And that's why we have a lot of punishment in front of us as a nation. We hope this is going to be over quick, but I'm afraid it's just not going to be quick. Because that is still the prevailing attitude amongst most of our people.
They just don't give a shit. They totally embrace sin.
They
don't care what their politicians do.
Oh, look at Barney Frank.
That's right. Well, that's his private life. Doing something for me, well, then, you know, that's okay. You entertaining me? Fine. I mean, it is disgusting. And this is a person that you would think was raised in Catholic school, raised by the nuns, would think at least a decency were intact. It does not.
No, if you don't run screaming away from the Catholic Church after, you know, you reach the age of reason, then I think, you know, you're going to have a long road to hoe.
But they do when you're in Catholic school. They teach you, you know, what sin is and what you should and shouldn't do. So you want to at least have some moral compass reasonably intact that's operational. But forget it. They don't. They do not.
Well, I have to tell you, Pilgrim, you know, I got my moral compass from my parents. I went to Catholic school. I went to Catholic church. I mean, my whole family was very deeply involved in the church. You know, lector, altar boy, usher, you know, all the volunteer work humanly possible. And by the time I was 15, I mean, I was so absolutely sick of the obvious hypocrisy. And I wasn't even an adult yet.
Uh-huh. I know. I know. It, you know, I mean, most kids grow up with, you know, do what I say, not what I do. But it depends on how egregious the difference is, you know?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I actually, you know, I kind of impress that on my children only from the standpoint that, you know, look, you're kids, you're not going to be able to do all the things that I do, you know, but not from the standpoint, okay, no, you're not allowed to watch this TV show, but then they'll walk in the room and see me watching it. No, no, that doesn't happen.
No, that's the kind of thing I'm talking about. They tell you not to lie, but when you're a kid and you catch them in a lie, they'll rationalize away or they'll give you the old, you do what I say, you don't do what I do. You know?
Right, yep, yep.
But no, that's the state of things today. And I think she is a typical example.
We'll be discussing a lot more of this tomorrow night for sure, Pilgrim. I've got a dump truck load of this type of stuff to discuss tomorrow.
It leaves you speechless. You grow up and you see people who should have, like I said, some kind of a core. You know, they may be influenced by the society, but you would think there would be some stability there, mental, emotional, spiritual stability of some sort. And there's nothing. They just blow around whichever way the masters want them to blow.
Well, it's that this is the type of thing that helps substantiate scripture, where, you know, it becomes painfully obvious that, you know, Yahweh opens the eyes of those he wants open, opens the ears of those he wants open, and those he doesn't, it's obvious that their eyes are going to be shut, at least for a while.
Yeah. Very true.
You know, sadly,
have to take a deep breath on the way, you know, in the meantime.
Right.
Scream too much.
Yeah, I mean, sadly, I'm dealing with that within my own marriage. And, you know, I'm trying to figure out still. You know, I thought it was over, and, you know, just as of like 3 or 4 days ago, we're kind of in a truce. And, you know, I don't want to see my 11 years go down the toilet, but, you know, it doesn't seem to matter what I say or what I do, you know, it just doesn't seem to matter.
No. People are on a me track now. I mean, that's human nature anyway. People, you know, tend to think their own interests, and that I understand. But it is so exclusive now. Nothing else matters. My, you know, entertainment, comfort, whatever, and everything else, you know, be damned. Parents are in the way they're getting old. Stick them in a home. A cheap one. You know, it's everywhere. It's everything. There is no commitment that means anything. There is nothing that takes precedence over, you know, my immediate gratification. Oh, that's it. That's the bottom line.
Yep. All life is about the G-spot.
Yep.
All they care about.
Life revolves around the little man. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, I find out in Israel identity with the spirit of Yahshua, Yahweh, that all of those things that in this stupid world that offend him, that offend our Creator, that the curse of all of that need not be upon his sons and daughters, but you surely feel filthy and dirty when even talking about it, I mean, or being around those situations and people, but there seems to be a reversal where the curse doesn't have to affect his children
you know, Yahweh's sons and daughters. Although it will outwardly to a certain extent, but inwardly, I think it need not be. You know, none of us want to partake of this, of all the crap that we've done in our past, or the crap that some of us continue with our blinders on. But I mean to say that there's going to be retribution for all of the evil that's done, and it's going to come right back upon all of those of us who haven't turned from our own stupid, wicked ways. It's going to go right back. It's not going to affect his kids, his children. I don't like using that word kid because that's like, it's like a goat, right?
Well, yeah.
What is a baby sheep called? A lamb? His little lambs, yeah.
Well, my wife just heard my little discourse here, and she just stormed out of the house like I just called her a freaking nigger or something.
Uh-oh.
I should be used to it by now.
I didn't hear you really say anything negative.
No, exactly, but that's what I'm dealing with.
You're making me the bad guy, aren't you? You're blaming me for everything, aren't you? It's all my fault, isn't it? Something like that?
Yeah.
Because you didn't say anything really all that bad. Probably.
Oh, I know.
Feeling, you know.
Your wife's white woman, Matt?
Yes.
Well, that's good.
Sounds like she doesn't like your relationship with your maker.
No. No.
Is she playing the Eve in the garden?
I'm sorry, I missed that.
Society thanks to offering them their alternative leader, government, and
you're missing out. You're dropping off.
That's because I got a crappy mic.
Well, it's not, when it's good, it sounds great.
I wouldn't call you that, Mike.
Sounds like your conscience. Thinking and doesn't want to face up to her own.
Yeah, I think you're touching on part of it there, David.
What I found
was, any better than you guys?
Relationship is that with women in the past, and I understand it now, but I didn't then, is that I think they like to have their role respected, and it should be. They definitely have a great role to play in a man's life. Like they can reflect back on you what you are and present it to you. And if you're wise, you take heed. She's wise. She does it in a way that will allow you to take heed without taking offense at the same time. That's the problem when there isn't an understanding of that, the godly relationship between a man and a woman and what they are together, discovering each other, then it can easily fall apart for, well, it seems like no apparent reason. The reasons are obvious if you understand what is supposed to be. You know,
oh, absolutely. Happened. Absolutely. And, you know, that's where it, you know, the understanding needs to start with the foundation. And I've always thought that that foundation was there.
Just suddenly went power, huh?
Is your wife racially aware, Matt?
No. other than, you know, what I've brought to the attention in the last year or so.
Oh, you mean the foundation? What foundation are you referring to? Did you have? She's not not a, you might say, a devotee or a believer in Yahweh and Christian identity and Israelite race being God. She doesn't accept that at all, or never did.
Well, it's kind of hard to explain in that I hadn't, since I left the Catholic Church 23 years ago, I really hadn't adhered to any organized religion because I didn't believe in it, but I have always held firmly and truly to at least the knowledge of scriptures being the word of Yahweh and the sacredness of the names of Yahweh and Yahshua and understanding exactly who they are. And it's just been, and I knew there was, always knew that there was a truth within the Bible that I wasn't getting. And I finally found it when I came across CI and the dual seed line, especially. And, you know, but I mean, the foundation was there. I've always been of that mind that, you know, I am the head of household. You know, we all have our different roles within the family. And I've always, it's been a very fundamentalist view of the family.
And your wife agreed, held that same view and understanding?
For the most part.
Uh-huh.
You know what I find is especially, well, not just CI, but just any of this kind of information, a lot of females are kind of left in the mud with other female friends and someone to relate to, and it's difficult for them because basically what they have to do is they have to isolate themselves from all the female crap that goes on created by the Jew out there. By the way, is my mic sound a little better? I switched to the push-to-talk deal here.
A lot better, Mike.
Yeah, it does.
Sounds good here.
But let me just say that in today's society, men don't realize how effeminate they are, and women don't realize how feminized they are, even when they deny it or even when they don't think so.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, Bill, that men have been feminized to the point where they don't display a warrior spirit, if you want to call it that, or a leadership role. It's kind of like you'll see sometimes where it's exemplified that, you know, a man is questioning too much of his woman or insecure. And, are you okay? Or are you all right? And you have that really feminine type of mentality. And so the women pick up on that and they feel the double amount of insecurity that the man is putting off on a woman. And so therefore they react to it as an instability in the leadership role of the man. And so the core problem really comes back to it's a two-sided coin. So, I mean, you can't put it on both parties, but...
it is a two-sided coin. It's probably the men's fault more than it is the woman, the women. But men have totally, in most cases, abdicated any leadership role. They have no idea what it's like to be men.
Right. Well, and I have to tell you that, you know, I have fought this whole demasculinity that's gone on within our society tooth and nail. I mean, anyone who knows me will tell you I am all man through and through, and, you know, I am all warrior, and you know, that is the way I take on everything. So it's definitely not from my lack of you know, knowing my position.
Well, unfortunately, the only roles most women are concerned with is the ones on their bellies, and the only roles that men are interested in are in the bed with another woman or man.
Yeah, another man. It's, you know, women are so used to, I think, today, And I don't think I'm wrong about this. What women are so accustomed to effeminized men that when they see an assertive man who stands up for his principles and what he believes and asserts his position as a man, that they resent that. They fear that quite often, and they resent that.
Exactly.
And I'm not saying that's the women here by any means, but to me, that's my idea about women in general. And looking back and not knowing it at the time, I had that experience with my own wives. But I didn't realize it then because I hadn't yet had the opportunity to step outside of the box and see what was going on.
Well, women, I think today, not like the position. No.
I'm sorry, they Pilgrim. You're cutting out a little, Pilgrim.
Sorry. They don't like being in a position of being told no. They've been told, you know, it's the princess image.
And I am woman, hear me roar and all that.
Oh, you mean, you know, don't tell me no, I want to go do this. You know, yet at the same time, how many of them, like you've said before, will turn around and go for some savage who will beat the living daylights out of her?
Because they mistake that as the warrior spirit, the leadership role, this more of this abusive role as leadership and manlyhood, unfortunately, in society.
Well, I think women who go for that, they have other emotional issues. But, you know, women are just very spoiled at this point. They don't even want to compromise, much less have somebody tell them no.
Exactly.
You're hitting the nail right on the head, Pilgrim.
And I'm glad a woman said it.
Well, you know, what can I say? We can talk about men next.
Yeah, I mean, I recognize men have many problems.
Their list is equally as long, you know.
Absolutely, I won't deny that.
All men and women come from men and women, that's for sure.
No, our society has been turned upside down since the I think it became evident in the 60s, but that's not when it started.
Started in Genesis 3:15, didn't it, Bill?
Oh yeah, right. That's true too.
Yeah, it's funny. A friend of mine, he says that you get one of two wives. You either get Noah's wife or you get Lot's wife. You get the one that gets on the ark without a question, and then you get the one that you tell them not to turn around, and they turn around and end up getting turned into a pillar of salt.
Yeah, that might be a good analogy.
Either the one that's really submissive and doesn't have any brain of their own, or the one that has too much opinion and too much militant feminism and doesn't want to hear a word you have to say. It's never the happy medium.
Right. We don't need the totally submissive woman either. And we need a woman that can think for herself and that can... Well, a woman's supposed to run the household.
Exactly. I mean, their role within the family is just as important, and there's, you know, a lot to do.
Yeah, I think the ideal is that you have two functioning adults who act like adults and can behave and make decisions as adults. And sometimes, one side or the other is going to compromise, but you work, you know, together to try to make the whole come together. Because hopefully you both have the same goal in mind. That's the ideal. How often do you ever see that?
Right. Well, and that's exactly why, you know, Yahweh says that when you leave your parents, you cleave unto your wife and you become one.
And a lot of Christians miss it, but the role of the woman is spelled out in the... It's in the closed Proverbs 31, I believe.
Yeah, I do remember reading that.
Proverbs 31 spells out the role of the woman in society.
Well, the same kind of relationship Yahweh has with his bride Israel in Scripture. What was that first command? First of the Ten Commandments, that thou shalt have no other gods before me, and thou shalt not make any craven images, and unfortunately, our weakness of our flesh is we always want to relate with one another man or woman with an image that's not the other. You know what I mean? And it's a condition in our Jew defecation society. But it's easy to put off. It's not so difficult. I think that our Jewish conditioning with this stupid Jew system going on, the devil has us always running in circles thinking that because we always ask such stupid possible questions and with our social conditioning that we are never able to just really trust in Yahweh and Yahshua to wipe the slate clean from all those images we have of one another, of our own kinfolk and our men and women. So we can have a clean slate and have his love burning in our hearts without any images. I'm not getting romantic or anything, I hope. But seriously, that's what I notice. But these non-whites, they seem to totally depend upon images in the sense of false gods that have nothing to do with Yahweh. And when we let them in our society, we adopt those images. When we accept them, we accept their images or their ways of life or social conditioning in our own lives, and that's we deserve what we get. That's for sure. But it's not difficult to put it off. But you sure can't live amongst them and around them very close in order to do it.
Oh, no, you're absolutely right about that. I was discussing that with my wife earlier today because I'm dealing with my 14-year-old having a identity crisis, you know, wearing the damn shoes falling off her feet and the damn hat turned sideways and the gangsta hoodie and all that crap. Oh yeah, trust me, I'd love to burn half of her fucking wardrobe.
Wow, that's a shame.
Yeah,
two words, baggy sweats. Whatever the girls want to wear, just baggy sweats. Until they're out of college and ready to get married, just put them in baggy sweats.
Maybe why not?
Yeah. There you go. And maybe some of that retainer headgear.
That's terrible. You said this is your daughter?
Yep, my stepdaughter.
Go out in your garage and get a big metal ring and saw about an inch off of it, and tell her, come over here, honey. I'm gonna put this in your nose. You want to be a nigga? And just
good luck.
That's my
stick it in her nose.
Good luck trying to rein the stepdaughter in with the strife going on with the old lady, though, man. That's going to be a tough one there.
Yeah, so that's kind of a tandem thing.
Is your girlfriend supportive?
What's that, Martin?
Is the girlfriend supportive of, I mean, what's her idea on the whole situation? Does she think, what does she think about what's going on?
Girls are only supportive when they're going to latch on to whatever they think is their idea of leadership at that point. So they'll go with whatever flow is cool at the time, usually.
Well, she knows how I feel on it, and she doesn't really like it either. But, you know, it's an issue of putting your foot down. And I'm really the only one who does it.
Yeah. Yeah, the only thing that you need to watch out for is that Jew organization DCF. That's what they call them for. Department of Children and Families. I don't know what to call them where you are.
Yeah, it's called Children and Youth here, and they've already been to my house.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, they're
yes,
just...
because we made the decision to homeschool her and my 5-year-old.
Really? And they came out for that?
Yeah, there was other accusations thrown in over it.
Okay. Huh. Yeah, basically they're like a Jewish stormtroopers that come in and try and take the whole family away.
Yeah. Oh, whole army of Janet Renos and Kagans.
Yeah, they showed up to my house while I was at work. They showed up to see. I have an 18-year-old son, a 14-year-old stepdaughter, and a 5-year-old son. And they came into my son's school, pulled him out of class, interrogated him in the office. You know, my wife let them in the door. As soon as she let them in the door, that's, you know, the shit hit the fan. And they were able to do whatever they wanted to do. And they came to the house every week for the next 6 weeks after that until they were, quote unquote, satisfied that there was no abuse going on in this house.
That is one of the things that I have such strong feelings about that. I try not to even speak about those types of situations because if the Jews were to know that would be the one that set me off, that would be the one that set me off. It would be game over. It would be game over for me and everybody around me because I would not put up with no damn kikes getting involved with my family at all. That's not happening.
Well, yeah, I'm right there with you, and trust me, I was probably about a hair's breadth away from doing probably the wrong thing. But needless to say, this, you know, this incident is not going to happen again.
Yeah, well, what I'm talking about wouldn't be an option of jail. It would just be me putting up my stink, and I'd be dead. But I'd put up the stink.
Yeah. Like I said, I was almost there, but you know, the fact that they didn't take my children, that was probably the motivating factor.
If that was a saving grace.
Yes, exactly. If they had touched my children, or you know.